Good morning. Welcome to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Great to be back. Was off the last week and came back to some colder weather and a lot of rain. Morning, Tony.
Good morning, Ernie. Yes, welcome back, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Good to be back. And thank Bob Bard for setting in for me last week and appreciate him subbing all the time.
Bobby Sub.
And listen back to the show on our podcast, which is a great way for you to check in and review some of the things you may have missed during the In and Around the House show. And I appreciate the good-natured ribbing that lasted the entire show.
Of course.
Yeah, it's good for you. Hey, let me get to this forecast because things have changed. You know, we have for the last several weeks been telling everyone this is the time to get your program down or fertilize your lawn. If you were going to do grass seed, and we're going to talk about that after I give you the forecast. Rain for the rest of this morning. It may start to lighten up sometime right around 8 o'clock. And then temperatures are going to remain in the 30s until right around noon when we crest that 40 mark. It will still feel cold, and we should see a little bit of sunshine right around 2, according to this forecast. But then for tomorrow, it is going to be cold but dry for the next several days, and temperatures will creep back up only into the 50s Monday and Tuesday and Wednesday. So with that in mind, Tony, let's just take a second and talk a little bit about, you know, people were asking about grass seed a couple of weeks ago, asking about fertilizer. Where are we now?
Ooh, we're pushing it. We really are. We've talked about it. We hammered on it pretty much last week, too. But the fertilizer part of things, you know, we're still going to have some decent days. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt about it. However, with the grass seed, you know, if you're still wanting to sow grass seed, yeah, it's pretty much, in my opinion, done for. I mean, you can go ahead and sow grass seed. Some of it may germinate early next year. Some of it may kind of wash away. Some of it may just rot.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you always have the option of sodding. You know, we've talked to Turpin many a times over at Turpin Farms. So, you know, it's all about timing. It's not difficult to grow grass seed. It's about when do you start the whole deal.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about it at the end of August. And it's hard to believe. Just next week, we're in November.
Yes, indeed.
So, you know, unfortunately, that's the cards we're dealt. And mm-hmm. we just have to deal with it and make the best of whatever. You know, I know there's some people probably trying to fix some bad spots in the lawn or maybe on a hillside or somewhere around the home. The most important thing you can do if you have a hillside is try and get things secure so you don't get any erosion or anything like that that starts to bother, you know, mess up things, so to speak. But yeah, you're right, Ernie. It's amazing how we went from an extremely warm fall to, like, let's just flip the switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should have been seeing some of this stuff weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And did you see the Facebook page?
I did.
We had that frost. I can't remember when you called it, but
it was. I remember this. The Farmer's Almanac said it was going to happen right around the 22nd.
Right.
And sure enough, it was real close. It was either the 23rd, 24th, something like that.
You were pretty close. And I just drove across the street from the garden center over at the cemetery, Mother of God. And as chilling or cold as that was, I kind of thought, you know, this might be appropriate. You see headstones and you see frost.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the frost was there. It's knocked back a lot of our annuals, mm-hmm. and as you can already tell. And the other part of the equation is I thought I had heard flurries, the term flurry.
Yes.
Did you hear that? Do you see that?
No, we may see some of that early tomorrow morning.
Gotcha.
As this rain moves out, there's another cold front that's going to mm-hmm. be blowing through, and there could be some flurries coming our way tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed any of your annuals just with that frost the other day, how it just nips them back like right now?
Yeah. A recoil might be a good word to describe that.
And that's a perfect example of doing things early in the spring. Mm-hmm. Just look at those plants, how long they've been in the ground this summer, mm-hmm. how well they flourish, perhaps. And all of a sudden, just that frost, that little bit of cold, bam, you know, it really takes them down.
Sure.
It's like when I used to wrestle you, you know, and I throw you down to the mat, take you down to the canvas.
You know, certainly everyone should have gotten their flowers in that needed to come in. But
I sure hope so.
Yeah.
that was something else we had talked about a lot. You know, bringing in some of those flowering plants that you want to winter over, mm-hmm. things like mandevilla, things like hibiscus, Boston ferns, various plants that you're trying to winter over. I hope that you had made the effort to already make sure that they were inside.
Mm-hmm.
If not, you'll know it.
What's going on down at the garden center?
Oh, everything.
Yeah.
Still selling a lot of shrubs, you know, have been actually selling a lot of trees because the fall is the best time to plant. And real quick, before I go on any further, I wanted to also touch base because, you know, this rain that we're having,
mm-hmm.
this is awesome. This is picture perfect. This is the moisture that our evergreens are going to need. And even a lot of the newer plants that we planted this spring, this summer, going into the fall, the latter part of fall, before we hit the winter head on,
right.
having ample moisture in the ground is so, so important. Mm-hmm. So I'm liking this steady rain.
Yeah, it's been constant for several hours.
Mm-hmm. And this is what we want. We don't want it all at once, right?
No.
We just want the steady rain. But we've been really busy at the garden center. Like I said, fall is the best time to plant. We're still going to have some wonderful days to still continue that.
Mm-hmm.
We've been getting ready for the holiday season, believe it or not.
We'll
kick off our artificial tree sale here next week.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just hard to believe, but we still need to get through Thanksgiving.
Yes, we do.
And we also need to talk a little bit about trick-or-treats next Tuesday, right?
Are you still going
out dressed up? Like you?
No, we prefer to sit on the porch and hand out candy and talk to our neighbors and all the little ones that come by. But I got to tell you what has happened already is mm-hmm. Lisa's had a fire in the fireplace for a week now.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't take, you know, the temperature just dropped down to below 50, and suddenly
right.
there was a need for a fire in the fireplace. And
right.
So we've got a lot of that up on the porch, and later in the show today, we have a guest coming in to talk about
fireplace. We do. Kirk Vonderhaar, as a matter of fact, he's from Vonderhaar Chimney and Fireplace, mm-hmm. and great guy. He was just by my house yesterday. Well, I'm going to post some pictures that he had taken while he was up on the rooftop of my home
mm-hmm.
inspecting my chimney.
Found
some things out. So you definitely want to hang in with us this morning. And Kirk will be with us from Vonderhaar around the 8 o'clock hour.
Okay. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you jump onto our Facebook page. Look us up and like us. And as Tony talked about, we've posted some pictures there. We're also going to talk about some of those little critters that might be trying to get inside. But we do need to pause for a moment. When we come back,
we're going to talk about some things that you need to be thinking about and taking care of. And I know it's raining today, but we still have a few nice days ahead of us. Rest assured. I'm sure that's how it usually ends up being.
Mm-hmm.
But things that you need to do as we tie up the season.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Got some rainy, ugly weather outside, and this is the perfect day for you to get out in it.
Are you serious?
And get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center.
Oh, man. This morning I had the shorts out. You know,
yeah.
I'm a shorts kind of guy.
Yeah.
And I thought, rain and upper 30s, low 40s is not comfortable.
Mm, no.
It puts, like, it's bone chilling.
It is. It gets a little cool. And then once you get wet and get cold, it's over.
It's over. that it is. And, you know, it's not the best of days to get outside and do some of those things around the house either. You know, unfortunately, because it's going to be wet, it's going to be muddy. But we're going to talk about it anyway. Hopefully, you've kind of been, you know, getting things in check, taking care of some of those last-minute items. We were talking about, you know, some of the insects that tried to make their way in.
Yes.
And the other day, I sprayed a bunch of those box elder bugs.
Did you?
They were all over the floor. There were thousands of them on the side of the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So I whipped out the old 38-plus.
And had at it.
Took care of me. And I was like, I was like a 38 special, 38
yeah,
plus.
Right.
And I went after him like John Wayne.
Uh-huh.
But great stuff, 38 plus. If you still need to do a little spraying around the house, obviously it's not going to happen this weekend. But I am confident we'll have some decent days where you can still do some of those chores. You know, spray around your windows, your doors, your garage doors, and so forth. Make sure your screens are in good shape. A lot of people, do you take your screens out? Or do you have screens?
No, we have screens.
Or you just fling the windows wide open and hang out of them?
No, we just lift them up to the top of the you know, the window and then pull them down during the
spring. We take ours out every year.
Do
so,
you?
Yeah. Tina's pretty diligent about it. But, you know, always check, you know, for those entry points where things can get in.
Uh-huh.
Certainly keep some of those unwanted visitors out. And, you know, the good thing is, you know, although you get those Asian lady beetles, the stink bugs mm-hmm. and so forth, spiders, you know, I wig out about spiders.
Yeah.
But hopefully you've taken care of some of this. We've sold a lot of 38-plus at the garden center. It's good stuff to spray outside around the foundation and so forth, and it will keep bugs at bay. Very, very helpful mm-hmm. stuff. Hope you've done some of those things. Also, I hope that you've taken the time to clean up your vegetable gardens a little bit. You know, I see a lot of people leave those tomato cages out, and those old tomato plants just, they're still in the ground, they're hanging on, all that old diseased foliage is laying on the surface
mm-hmm.
of the soil, and guess what? All that stuff just harbors itself, and it makes its way out, and it'll see you early next year sometime.
Yeah, it'll resurface.
Those are nice tasks to do. Hopefully you've at least gotten down one fertilization on your lawn. That's important. I know some people aren't going to get the two applications down because you need a little bit of time in between the applications, at least 6 weeks.
Now, let me ask you.
No, I'm not going to let you ask me.
Yes. When I was listening back to the show and the podcast mm-hmm. last week, Bob mentioned something, and I'm struggling to recall it right at the moment, said if you didn't get the first one down, at least get this one down. Which one, what application is he talking about?
Well, he's just saying just to get one fall application down.
Okay.
And if you don't do two, at least do one.
Okay. Same product.
Same product.
Okay.
Absolutely. And those who, we even had some people ask the other day, had called into the garden center, and those who had put down their first fall application of fertilizer on the lawn back in early September, they were like, can we go ahead and put the second one down? Absolutely, because there's been 6 weeks in between applications, and you're fine.
Mm-hmm.
But at least get one down. Obviously, it's not going to happen today, but it might be a great day to get out to one of the local garden centers and nurseries. Then, you know, check with the Fertiloom dealers, pick up your fertilizer. Although you won't get it down today, I'm sure, like I said, we'll have some nice days ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It always happens that way, Ernie.
Yes, it does.
You know, so it's not a bad gig at all. I love fall, and, you know, was it last year? We stayed warm almost all the way up into December.
Mm-hmm.
It was yeah. relatively warm. It was a while before we saw that first frost, too. And if you're wanting to plant some things, still, it's a great time to do that as well. The fall season's a wonderful time to plant, and we've said this many a times. That's because the ground's still relatively workable. It's warm. It's going to take a while for it to really cool down, but you still get a lot of growth under the soil surface.
Right.
Great root development. Have you worked on anything in your yard lately? I've not heard you say
firewood. Firewood. That's all we've been doing for the last couple of weeks is splitting firewood and moving it and rotating it in.
And nothing else?
No, haven't had a chance.
You have not even talked about... very rarely do you talk about mowing.
Well, it's not one of my favorite things to do.
Well, no, but I mean, you don't talk about that. I haven't yet... I've not seen you buy your fertilizer yet. Where are you buying it?
I haven't.
Huh? Where are you spending your good money? Where are you buying the fertilizer? Are you seeing somebody else on me?
No.
Huh?
No, you feel like I'm cheating on you?
I don't know. I've not talked about applying any fertilizer. Usually you borrow my spreader.
Yeah. Yep. I did.
Where have you been?
I've been working in my basement on the remodeling project and gutting firewood.
I just called you out.
After 4 years, I finally have that basement bathroom finished. It didn't take me long. You saw it.
I wish Paul Rice was here.
Yeah.
Paul from Bluegrass Quality Meats. I know he would attest to this. It's a huge shower with a commode in it. That's what it is. And that big...
rain shower.
Yeah, right in the ceiling.
Yeah, right in the mm-hmm. ceiling. And
there's plenty of room for you.
Yes, there is. It is exactly how we had hoped it would turn out. It's a locker room downstairs in the basement. You know, when you're somebody my size, there's nothing worse than trying to get into a small shower. So we eliminate that threat.
I hear you.
But we finally have that project finished. We had the basement bedroom framed in, the closet framed in. That's kind of what I've been doing, those projects. Because now that weather has turned colder and rainy and nasty, we can work downstairs. Now, yeah, next project is to get some electric in and get the drywall.
That's a good time. Yeah, it's a good time to do those things indoors. Yeah. There's no doubt about it. But like I said, outside, I've not heard you mention one peep about anything outdoors.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
Next Tuesday's Halloween. Let's talk about jack-o'-lanterns. What are you looking for when you pick up that pumpkin?
Oh, great idea. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Rainy and cold. It is the final week of, or final few days, I should say, of October, getting ready for Halloween and the trick-or-treaters. It will be dry on trick-or-treat, according to the forecast, and a little crisp, which is perfect for the little ghost and goblins.
I bet you're the kind of guy, when you hand out candy, you put your hand partly in her bag and pull out two and drop one.
I know, but that's a great idea. I wish I'd have thought of that.
Yeah.
I don't get to pass out the candy. Lisa handles that because I'm too generous.
Hey, little fella, let me see what you have in your bag so far. That looks good.
I'm guilty of reaching my big paw she uses one of her big pots, mm-hmm. Set by the door, and I just throw handfuls in there, and the real fun part about that is, it's trick-or-treating from 6 to 8, so it's 7:58, 7:59. That last little trick-or-treater at the house gets everything. We just dump it in their bag. Probably 2 or 3 years ago, this beautiful little girl came up, and she was the last one. She couldn't have been more than 3, 4, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And when she came to the door, I was, as I often do, I wasn't thinking. And so I thought, well, you know what? She's the last little trick-or-treater. She held her little paper bag out, and I emptied that big pot into her bag, and it hit the ground. She couldn't even pick it up. Dad had to come back up from the sidewalk and carry it away for her. It was too cute. I don't get to do that.
That sounds like it. What about the one that comes to the door with the cigarette?
Turn them away.
Get out of here.
I flat out tell them, if you're old enough to smoke, you're too old to be trick-or-treating.
There you go.
Yep. So I do draw the line there.
Do you carve a pumpkin?
Yes, we do.
Will you have a jack-o'-lantern out?
We'll have a jack-o'-lantern out. We have 5 grandsons, so we try to keep a lot of those traditions alive.
So what do you typically carve? I mean, will the kids carve it? Will the grandsons carve the pumpkin? Or will you kind of assist? What do you do?
Since their mom and dads like to keep that tradition alive those. So when we do get them, if they're there beforehand, we'll let them, Lisa will clear out the table, and they'll have a little fun doing that and baking cookies in the whole nine yards.
Right.
And but if not, then we'll carve it.
What do you look for when you select or pick out a pumpkin? What are some of the traits or qualities?
Size matters.
Does it? Yeah.
Normally, again, I have to defer to that. Lisa, we usually do that. She'll pick one out and, just a decent size so we can get a face on it and make sure there's room for a candle.
Well, you've yet to say anything about, make sure it's not rotten, it's firm, right?
Well, yeah.
Yes, that's what I'm asking. When you look for that pumpkin,
I see.
You said size. Yeah. No, you said size. That's, you think bigger is always better.
Yeah. Make sure it's got a great little knob on the top so you can pick it up.
You need a stem. You have to have a stem.
Yeah.
Absolutely. That's so important.
And a nice flat bottom, but not rotted.
Right. Did I ever tell you the story? I'm sure I did. When I was a youngster, my grandfather used to sell pumpkins right there on 3L.
No.
And we would my cousin Nikki and I, we would always go out and help him cut pumpkins.
Mm-hmm.
And he would rent a U-Haul truck, and he paid a guy a couple $100 to grow a field of pumpkins, and we would drive that U-Haul truck. We weren't even old enough to drive, but he would let us drive that truck out in the field.
Right.
But we would cut pumpkins. And the thing with my grandfather was, don't break the stem. You be careful with the stems. Mm-hmm. Be careful with the stems, because that's what sells them.
Sure.
It gives it character. Yeah. You got to hit the longer the stem, the better.
Right.
We would fill up that U-Haul truck with pumpkins, and my grandfather would bring that truck in on 3L. That's when it was 2 lanes back then.
Mm-hmm.
And he would have traffic backed up like nobody's business. Oh, it was hilarious.
And there wasn't any passing lanes, you know.
No. I'm not kidding you. There would be like a slew of cars behind us, and I'm sure they're thinking like, "What's this all about?" Yeah. You know, you've been behind people.
Like I have, but the thing I don't remember about that is road rage. I remember people going, "Oh, stuck."
Yeah. So as we're coming in on 3L. And you know where Swifty gas station is.
Oh, yes,
I do. That's where my grandfather lived, right next door to Swifty's. And now where my grandfather lived, the house is no longer there, but it was a pretty, it was a pretty sizable hill.
Mm-hmm.
Not quite like the one in your backyard.
Right.
Anyway, my grandfather would tell me or my cousin Nikki, get out, stop that traffic. Well, we're thinking, well, you already have practically.
Yeah.
You know, so we would snicker at one another and we would put our hands up and stop traffic, and it would take my grandfather a couple maneuvers to get that truck backed up into the yard.
Mm-hmm.
And those were good old times.
Certainly.
And he would have busloads of kids stop by his house down in the front, and he would sell pumpkins all fall.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, right there before the big day, the big jack-o'-lantern
right.
day.
Right.
So I remember that. I don't know if I ever told you that story or not.
No, don't recall that part. But you know what? Somebody a couple of years ago turned us on to roasted pumpkin seeds.
Oh, that was, I can't think of his last name. Kenton County Police Officer Aaron.
Yeah.
Schleffer. I can't remember his last name.
Those were awesome. So
they were.
Now when we do the pumpkin, we'll dry the seeds out and roast them. And
they are really good.
Add a little garlic and the whole nine yards. That was
a nice little treat. You just add a little bit of oil and kosher salt. And heat them up on a baking sheet, you know, about 350. And you know, turn the oven on to 350 degrees for about 15, 20 minutes, maybe, mm-hmm. give or take. And
that's how I fix them.
Is that how you fix them? But, they, you know, it's funny you say that because he had stopped by the florist, the garden center.
Yeah.
And he said, here you are.
Right.
And they were good. That was the first time I ever had pumpkin seeds. They were good.
Very good. You remember
that. Good memory.
Yeah. But the jack-o'-lantern has a wonderful history, and I'm going to share this with you right now. I just did a quick little search, and there were a couple of things that I was aware of, but I didn't know this story, that people, of course, have been making jack-o'-lanterns for Halloween for centuries, and the practice originated, oddly enough, from an old Irish myth about a man nicknamed Stingy Jack, and according to the story, and all great stories start mm-hmm. with drinks. So Stingy Jack invited the devil to have a drink with him, and true to his name, Jack didn't have any money and couldn't pay for the drink, so he convinced the devil to use his magic powers to turn himself into a coin so that he could buy their drinks and continue for a festive night. So once the devil did so, Jack picked up the coin and put it into his pocket next to a silver cross, which prevented the devil from changing back into his original form. Jack eventually freed the devil from his coin curse, so to speak, and that was only under the condition that he wouldn't bother him until the next year. So when the devil came back and said, let's go back and have some more drinks, Jack, he said, well, I don't know about that, so maybe we'll just go hang out under this tree and have some of this that I have, which was homemade liquor, I guess. So Jack convinced the devil to go up into the tree and change himself into a piece of fruit so he could eat. Well, when the devil did that, Jack carved the sign of the cross into the tree so the devil couldn't come back down until he promised not to bother Jack for 10 more years. So in order to keep the devil at bay, people adopted the mystery or the tradition of taking turnips, potatoes, and there was something else that they would use.
Radishes.
Large radishes. And they would carve ugly faces in them and put them near doors and windows next to a candle to keep the devil at bay during Halloween. So they wouldn't come back for another year. So once that tradition came from Ireland and Scotland into the United States, they discovered the pumpkin, which made a beautiful, perfect jack-o'-lantern, and that's where that jack-o'-lantern tradition is in the U.S. I don't know if Ireland and Scotland, they still use turnips, radishes, and potatoes, but that's the history of the jack-o'-lantern.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah.
I remember that vaguely. Mm-hmm. We had talked about that a few years ago. It's been a while since we've, mm-hmm. I think, we're in our, what, eighth year here?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. Mm-hmm. But I think one time before we talked about that old story, which is funny. It's kind of
it is
got a good connotation to it. I have to ask you this too. Do you know of any way to like really preserve that pumpkin to make it last a little longer once you open it up and carve it? Have you ever heard of any types of approaches or anything of the sort? Because I've heard of a couple things.
No, but I have seen people in the last several years paint them.
Yeah, that's an easy way to do it.
Hold that thought. We need to pause for a moment. We're a little behind right now. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. When we come back, we're going to continue our conversation about pumpkins and jack-o'-lanterns as we get ready for Halloween. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Halloween coming up in a couple of days. We were talking a little bit about the jack-o'-lantern, and Tony was wondering if there was a way to preserve those. Normally, what we do, you know, we'll have the corn stalk or a little hay bale or you know, something like that.
Right.
And all we did was once the Halloween was over, we just turned the pumpkin face around to face the barrel or the bale of hay, and it looks like a Thanksgiving decoration.
Well, not wrong. It doesn't take them long to break down, actually.
No, but that's when you get a little surprise early in the spring and a pumpkin plant shows up. I've had that happen before.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
It doesn't, yeah. Those seeds, they make it all winter in there. There
yes,
it is.
They do. That's a little early for you, isn't it?
Yeah, but typically, you know, you want to find that perfect pumpkin. You said it was all about the size.
Mm.
I couldn't agree more. You know, you need to be able to get those big hands inside, so when you clean it out,
that's right.
It's easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's all about really fighting the mold and the dehydration element of the pumpkin once you cut it open. So that's where really, you know, things come into play. Now, I've never done it, though, that if you just use maybe like 3 tablespoons of bleach to like 3 gallons of water and submerge your pumpkin in there just for a couple of, you know, seconds and then pull it back out, let it dry before you work on it. So you're getting rid of the mold.
Okay.
You ever heard of that? Now, I don't know if that really works or not, if it really prolongs the longevity.
This is interesting.
Another way to do it, if you do that first, and secondly, some people I've heard have taken petroleum jelly after they've carved it and have rubbed it on the outer side.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know if that truly helps preserve it. And I've even heard of people using WD-40. So I would just... You already spit that coffee out.
I'm glad I had my head turned.
I am too. Well, hey,
a little WD-40 goes a long way.
Let me tell you. I'll tell you what, it does. So, and you know, that's all I want to ask you. Have you ever tried any of those methods, and do those methods work?
I can honestly say I have never given that any thought. You know, it was, I guess, the old school part of me was, carve the pumpkin, put it out, put a candle in it, hope during cabbage night none of the kids pick it up and throw it across the street.
Cabbage night. How could I forget about cabbage night? Oh, a little mischievous Ernie. What did you do on cabbage night? Did you ever do anything on cabbage night that you shouldn't have done?
I'm going to take the fifth on that.
Okay. Good call.
But we certainly hope that we're always surprised if the pumpkin is still out there on after cabbage.
Well, you're driving down the street and there's one, a couple smashed. You're like, yeah.
You start seeing them along the highway.
Here's a little advice. After Halloween, take that pumpkin in and throw it away.
Mm.
Or it might be out in the street in front of your house.
I'm just going to share a quick story I read this week. In St. Louis, police caught these 4 teenagers with 40-some-odd stolen pumpkins in this van where they'd been going around and stealing pumpkins from porches and stuff. A little early, as I might mention, for cabbage night, unless they do it differently in St. Louis. So the police, using their backdrop for their lineup that they usually do when they ask people to come in and identify criminals, they lined them up and then started posting the pictures of the pumpkins on their Facebook page and asked people to come down to the...
Get your pumpkin to line up. That's pretty good.
To get your pumpkin at the station.
So is there like a forward, like a front photo and a side photo and a little height chart?
Do you know this pumpkin?
Do you know this pumpkin? How funny.
Yeah.
No, but I'm looking forward to next week. And I think it's going to be relatively cool. And that's the night where you might mix up a little concoction. You go and you sit out, you hand out candy, turn on the, like either build a fire out in the driveway or use one of those propane mm-hmm. heaters, maybe make a pot of chili. So it's always fun. And it's a hoot to see the little ones all dressed up.
It is.
It's really fun to see that. Mm-hmm. So I'm looking forward to it. What about you?
Me too.
What do you hand out?
Whatever Lisa buys. Yeah.
Are they like the little candy bars?
Yeah, they're all little mixed miniatures, you know.
You know, they've been bringing in those like small candy bars into the garden center.
Yeah.
And I can't keep my hand out of the
bowl. I know.
I'm not a candy person, but I like Snickers and Reese's Cups.
I'm a dark chocolate guy. If there's one of those dark chocolate pieces in there, that's I get caught because I'm not very good at sneaking. You know, Lisa will hear the rustling of the pot, my hand in the pot, and you'll hear this, get out of there.
Well, wait till the last minute to pick up the candy before Halloween, and then you're not in it too early.
Yeah, yeah.
Then you don't have to worry about it because you hand it all out to the last person.
Mm-hmm. Throw it in there.
Or you get that straggler.
Yeah, there's usually one or two.
Do you make them say trick or treat?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's a part of the deal.
And if they don't
get anything.
Man, you're mean.
I am.
You're mean, Ernie.
We send them on their way. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're going to talk about what's bugging you. There's a little furry friend, a little furry fellow, that might be trying to make his or her way into the home as we start to cool down.
We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And before we get to the what bugs you, Tony, we have Christy on the line from Eastgate's got a carving pumpkin question, or a pumpkin carving question. Wembley, wembley, wombley. Hi, Christy. Thanks for holding on.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
I actually don't have a question.
Okay.
I actually have a pumpkin tip or hack.
Ooh, I love those. Yeah.
Sometimes when you go to the farms and you pick your pumpkin, your little stem either falls off or you can't find a pumpkin that has like a really nice stem for carrying.
Yeah.
So what we have done and what we do is we cut the bottom of the pumpkin out and then we carve the pumpkin from the bottom. And then when you put your candle in, you can just like lay it either on the concrete or put your little candle on a plate and place the pumpkin over top of it.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about, like, the pumpkin or the candle falling inside the pumpkin or...
Yeah.
It seems... I don't know if it has anything to do with it, but our pumpkins seem to last longer when we carved the bottom off instead of the top. I mean, I don't know if that's just coincidence, but they last longer.
Well, I guess it stands to reason it keeps the bottom of the pumpkin up off of the ground or whatever it's on because that's where the rot begins.
Well, I think less oxygen and so forth gets into the pumpkin.
Yeah.
If it's on the bottom of the, you know, if it's on the driveway or something.
That's a great
idea.
That's
interesting.
Christy, do you go with the scary faces or do you go with some humor?
I am not a Halloween person. I like the Charlie Brown stuff, so I go with the cute stuff. My husband goes with the scary stuff.
Ah, well, good.
Speaking of Charlie Brown, I watched The Great Pumpkin the other night.
I know, such a wonderful
It's a classic,
it
yes.
It is.
Well, thanks for sharing. That's interesting. And I never thought of that, but that would make it a lot simpler. You wouldn't have to cut the top off, and if you don't have the stem, and just put it right over your candle.
Just carve the whole bottom of the pumpkin out. Works perfect.
Very good. Very good. Well, thank you, Christy. Appreciate the call, and thanks for listening.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. What's bugging you, Tony?
Well, it's not really bugging me. Sometimes they do, especially down in my shed.
Uh-huh.
But this time of year, you know, as we just flipped the switch, and we've gone from extremely above normal temperatures where it's really been warm, cooling down rapidly, mice want in.
Yes, they
Nothing
do.
Nothing more. Ooh, that's just kind of like, but hey, they've been here for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't take mice a very large area to get into and get into the home. And there's a couple of things that you can do. Traps. You ever use any of them traps? You ever have mice issues in your shed?
No.
Oh, come on, Ernie.
Really, well, we have.
Oh, Ernie, you're not exempt from mice.
We have four cats.
And they hang out in the shed?
Oh, yeah, they're indoor-outdoor cats. They're just, you know, and two or three other neighbors have cats.
Well, I know that there's a squirrel in your neighborhood that has a key to your shed, yeah. So I don't think that the cats do.
You know what? I'm glad you brought that up. I need to fix that hole that they climb up in.
There you go.
But no, we don't have mice problems because of the cats.
No. Traps. I like to trap them, you know, especially down in my shed.
Yeah.
Hey, you know, it's just, that's what they're trying to do. This time of year, they're trying to get in.
Yeah.
And if you think you don't have mice, you better think again. If you have one, you have 10.
Yeah, especially if you have any kind of seed.
Exactly, right? Bird seed.
Right. They're going to get in because they're hungry. They're trying to forage for food.
That's why you need a good galvanized garbage can to keep all that stuff in and keep critters out.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you can use the poison, little, like the food bait traps. And also, last but not least, Bonide makes a product called Mouse Magic.
And Mouse Magic.
It's like Walt Disney World. Mouse Magic.
Yeah, I was just getting ready to say that the wizard thing is a great little show.
Well, the reason why that Mouse Magic kind of came about for me is there were a number of customers that had RVs, they had boats, they had campers. And what they would do, they were looking for Mouse Magic, which really, the active ingredients in Mouse Magic, it's just peppermint oil and spearmint oil, and that deters mice.
Really?
And it works. I'm telling you, it works. Mm-hmm. I've used it. But a lot of people, you know, they have sheds or like cottages, garages, basements, you know, just places where you've had activity. This really repels mice. And I don't know what it is about the peppermint and the spearmint oil, but it's very effective. And if you don't believe me, try Mouse Magic, and if you have activity somewhere, put out a couple traps and see if anything triggers the trap.
Okay.
And what do you like to put in your traps? You don't even trap much.
Yeah.
You're not a hunter.
It's not going to be cheese or peanut butter because I love those things.
Cheese or peanut butter.
Not wasting that on mouse traps, pal.
But anyway, give it a shot. See if you can pick up Mouse Magic somewhere. Tell me what you think. Or if you've used it before, what are your thoughts? But I've found it to be quite effective and an easy way to deter mice. You know, they avoid it. They avoid those areas.
Sure. And we have that information posted on our Facebook page.
I haven't put it up there yet, but we will certainly do that.
Make sure you jump onto our page, In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, and look us up and like us. And we need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're going to talk about keeping other critters out. Some of the insects, you know, you're still going to see those guys as well. Mm-hmm. I know that the other day I was spraying for the box elder bugs, but there's some things that we can still do to keep these little home invaders out.
We'll be right back. Welcome back In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And Tony, when we were in the break, we got a call from our friend Jim in Owensville. Said you can also sprinkle a little cayenne pepper around those entryways or places that mice might be getting into, and they do not like that.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm.
I like cayenne pepper. It wouldn't keep me out. I like it spicy and hot. You know, yes, that's indeed an interesting flair. I didn't know that. But I do like the Mouse Magic because it's kid and pet friendly. It's safe. So, you know, if you're looking for some alternative approaches to keeping mice away or deterring mice, try it. You know, tell me what you think. And if you've used it, tell me what your thoughts are. But I found it to be very effective. I'm not just saying that.
Sure.
And I find it amazing. Just spearmint and peppermint will do that. But, you know, there's a lot of natural remedies for things. So I don't like mice.
No, they can be destructive.
Oh, yeah, and just all of a sudden, you know, they're taking over. And like I said, if you have one, you have many.
Mm-hmm.
There's no doubt about it. They love to hang out in the attic, Ernie.
That's right.
They can go up and down in between walls. It's amazing how they get around. You remember the old mouse trap ride at Coney Island?
I do.
Wasn't it called the mouse trap?
Yeah.
That was an interesting ride. I just came to thought. I don't know.
You're going back some time there, my friend.
Those were the good old days. The old mouse trap and the shooting star. That was kind of a little wicked roller coaster.
Daggone, you're old.
No, I'm not. I'm not that old. Not at all. And you know, we were talking about some other things too that try to make their way into the house. And it's the lady Asian beetles and the box elder bugs and the stink bugs and stuff like that. Obviously not today, but if you get an opportunity, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, pick up 38 plus, pick up Turf Ranger, put those things around your perimeter of your house outside, and use Killabug 2 on the inside, and you'll keep some of those critters at bay, especially spiders too. Very, very effective for spiders. So it's just, you know, take care of some of those things. You know, I'm not that kind of person. I don't like the bugs.
Yeah.
Just bugs.
And they're, you know, the reason they're trying to get in is because it's cold outside. It's rainy outside. They know that winter is coming, and they're looking for a little place.
And you know
what?
It happens all of it. You know, it's all at once. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Tony, we have Sam on the line from Fayetteville. Sam, I've never heard about the electric mouse traps. Tell us about
those.
Oh,
that's interesting.
Yeah. I just learned about them myself last year.
Yeah.
We had a situation for the first time ever where a rat managed to work its way in under the kitchen area.
Wow.
And as you know, those are a large pain to deal with. Well, my wife did a little investigation online and found out about these little rat traps that are electronic. They have like three plates inside of them. They're shaped like a mailbox. They are extremely efficient.
I'm sorry, Sam, but that image just came into my mind, like that electric bug zapper. Is, do the lights flicker when you get one run across?
Actually, they do. There is a little light sensor on top of it if you put it in a dark area, like under a cabinet or sink.
Wow, you're watching TV.
You're... when it's got a mouse in it.
You're watching TV, Ernie, and all of a sudden, the lights dim. We got activity.
We got one. It runs on, like, I believe 4D batteries.
Okay.
It's quite an amazing product. Really? I highly suggest it.
Where did you pick that up? I'm just curious.
We looked at them online. I believe she bought it at either Tractor Supply or Rural King, one of the two.
An electric mouse trap. Right. That's interesting. I'm going to check into that. That's a great... great tip there.
So it's
an amazing product. I would suggest it to everybody. They're a little expensive up front. Yeah. I want to say it was maybe $30,
right.
$40.
So
it's well worth it in the money versus using sticky traps or the old snap traps, in my opinion.
Oh, yeah, the sticky trap's a weird thing.
That's the one of the things that really has always bothered me about that is leaving poison out. You never know what's going to come through there and that kind of thing. So this is a little more efficient.
On a side note, with the poison, I had a situation with that where mouse got a hold of some poison and got into the wall and died.
Right, right.
So I don't suggest using that in an area in the house where you can have that happen.
Right. Yep. The other thing is that's why I ask you if it alerted you so that you can get that corpse out.
There is no audible alert, but if you check on it regularly, obviously, if you have a mouse problem, I do anyway.
Right.
You'll look underneath there, and there is a flashing LED light on the top that'll notify you if there is a mouse in it.
Well, Sam, appreciate the call. Now, thanks for the heads up. We'll have to check that out.
Have a good weekend. Thanks, Sam. That was great. You know, and I'm looking online, and Victor makes those.
Okay.
Yeah, and he's right. They aren't cheap, but, boy, that puts an interesting spin and flair on it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'm going mouse hunting.
You just never know what's going to spark conversation, and we have Jane on the line. Is that correct? Jane from Dayton. Got a question or a comment about mouse magic. Hi, Jane. Thanks for hanging on.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning, Jane.
Good morning.
I was going to tell you that I bought some of the mouse magic over at Jackson's and put it out. And I'm petrified of mice. So I put it out in my husband's shed, and he hasn't seen any.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So that's music to my ears when people give you feedback, because sometimes, you know, some products can be, you know, all about smoke and mirrors or snake oil, so to speak. But I found it to be effective. And I just, you know, when I hear other people affirm that, you know, it makes me feel better that it is a good product. But
and
it's
I
an
also
easy
put
way
a
to
a couple of them in my cabinets. And if nothing else, it makes your cabinet smell really good.
There you go.
Yeah. Great idea.
But I also, in the house, now we have woods behind our house, so we get bombed with them every fall. And like I said, I'm petrified of them. I couldn't kill one or pick one up if I had to. But we also have these electronic things that you put into the wall sockets.
So
like
is it
plug-in things?
Mm-hmm. Oh, like frequency things to run
yeah,
off?
Yeah, okay. Like an ultra frequency sound in the house, and I have one in every room in the house. So since I put those in, I have not seen any.
Right, right. Good idea. Well, Jane, thank you so much for the call.
You're welcome,
appreciate
guys.
It.
Have
All
a
right.
good day.
Have a good weekend. Thanks, Jane.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. A couple of great ways to stay connected with us. So you can email us, in and around the house at B105.com. You can also jump onto our Facebook page, and Tony posted a couple of pictures about some of the little intruders that start surfacing this time of year because the weather's nasty outside and they're foraging for food and shelter.
Absolutely. That time of year. And, you know, like it or not, you know, where I live, we have a wooded area behind our home.
Uh-huh.
And, hey, you know, mice have been here for a long, long, long time. And they're hard to keep out. They really are. So it's just one of those things. And, Ernie, when we come back out of the break, I want to talk about something that's really been hitting the headlines here as of recent. And it's a product that a lot of us have used, a lot of us are familiar with. And I just have my two cents to share about it when we come back. And you're going to hang out. You're going to want to hear this.
In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And a great way to stay connected with us is on our Facebook. Jump on and look us up and like us. And we always have some things we're going to share with our friends. And Tony's got something he wants to share with you right now.
Well, there's a lot of controversy
taking place. Oh, no.
Kind of like you, Ernie.
Not
a lot of
controversy.
A lot of controversy.
Yeah.
And it's over a very popular product that most everybody has used at some point in time or still use it today. And it's at all the garden centers and all throughout. And that is Roundup.
Mm. And, I saw this.
Yeah, so there's a lot of controversy over this. And, you know, Roundup is a weed killer. Well, it will kill most anything or injure anything that it gets on. And the active ingredient in it is glyphosate. And there's a lot of controversy that this has been known to cause cancer and so forth. Again, I don't know what all the data shows or what it says. I know that it's been around for a number of years, and a lot of people use it. And I do want to say this. Always use things according to what the label specifies.
Mm-hmm.
More is not better. We say this all the time. That's why I'm bringing this up, because, you know, let's look at it like this, too. Let's talk about diet sodas.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So there's a lot of things that people say, hey, that's linked to an abundance of strokes.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Okay, you can tie a lot of things to a lot of different various outcomes and so forth, and you can say, hey, there's some link there. You know, was it aspartame that's in some of the diet sodas?
Aspartame. Mm-hmm.
So who knows? But anyway, talking about Roundup and Kills-All and various things that have glyphosate in it, you know, people who are in the industry that use these things day in and day out, you know, who's to say what the long-term effects are? And nobody really knows. But as a homeowner, we're not using things day in and day out like that. You know, it's like, you know, you were just cleaning your glasses a little while ago with Windex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how often do we do those things? But, you know, what I'm really trying to push forth here or emphasize is always use things according to the label and the instructions. Please read those instructions. That's what they're there for. Always wear protective clothing. And when I say that, you know, don't go out in flip-flops. You know, shorts and without a shirt and, you know, you're spraying into the wind and all of a sudden it's in your eyes, it's in your face, or it's on your skin. You need to immediately wash that stuff off if, in fact, it gets on your skin. Our skin is porous. You know, things get into the skin rather quickly. So wear protective clothing. And most importantly, when you're mixing these products, have specified items or measuring cups that you use all the time and use those only and not others. And clean those when you're finished, and always wear gloves. You know, just be responsible. I just want to point this out. I've used Roundup and various things and Kills-All over the years. I don't use it every day. It's not part of my, you know, my daily activity. But use things according to the labels, be it Roundup or whatever it is that you buy at garden centers or nurseries or anything as far as that goes.
Mm-hmm.
But I just want to throw my two cents in on that. You know, did you watch that? I think it was there was an episode the other night on TV about Roundup.
Mm-hmm. I did see that.
You know, and everybody is really guns and are going after Monsanto, and that's one thing. But I just want to say this. You know, I don't know if it does or if it doesn't cause any issues, but just be proactive when you're using those products.
And always exercise caution.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And just be aware of your surroundings and what's going on and what you're using.
And there are alternatives. That's why we always emphasize to get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center. You'll get the absolute best advice there.
And that's
what you're trying to do.
And I'm glad you brought that up, because that was what I want to say next. You know, there are some alternatives to getting rid of things. And, you know, there's a lot of people that talk about using vinegars with a water mixture to spray various weeds and so forth or things. And you pretty much, for the most part, get a top burn.
Right.
And there are some people say, hey, it kills all the way down into the root, which it might on some plants, and it may not on others. But that's another alternative. That's a safe alternative. So you do have choices. And you're starting to see more of these things on the shelves at the garden centers and nurseries that are a little more friendlier, you know, if you have kids around or pets. And, you know, we certainly don't want any bad outcomes from using various products. But I saw that the other day, and it's really been in the news, and it's been on the forefront and the burner for a number of years, actually. It isn't anything that's new or just came up. Just more and more people are starting to talk about it. So what we're talking about is the controversy, you know, does Roundup or Kills-All or other products that have glyphosate, you know, do they in fact cause cancer? It's a very interesting take, and I can't say that it does or doesn't, but just always use caution and always read the labels. That's what's most important.
And follow them.
And, you know, we say this all the time. Any product, think about this. When it says to use 2 tablespoons to a gallon, that does not mean 4, and it does not mean 6, and it doesn't mean use it straight up without mixing it. You know, they are concentrates.
Right.
And companies spend a lot of time, a lot of money in research and development to come up with the right measures to go after what it is you're trying to get rid of. Think about this. If they tell you 2 tablespoons is adequate, wouldn't you think they might tell you 4? So you go through the product quicker, and you're back at the store buying more, and it means more money for them, more dollars in their pocket. So they're telling you that for a purpose, and that purpose only. And in some situations, too, read the labels, because it will tell you not to use a product more than so many times throughout the course of a season on a various plant or on your lawn. So I just want to throw my 2 cents out there, and I didn't want to beat a dead horse. But, you know, we are, in fact, in the industry, and just want to bring it to the table.
Get to your locally owned, independently operated garden center and get the best advice. Bar none. Coming up in just about 45 minutes, we have a guest that's going to be joining us at 8 o'clock, and we're going to talk a little bit about fireplaces.
Kirk Vonderhaar. And actually, I'm going to try and get my photos on Facebook.
Okay.
He was up on my roof yesterday, took a couple photographs, and I learned a lot about my fireplace, what it's really comprised of, how it was put together. And I'm sure Kirk's going to, you know, shed some more information on that as well, and what he does for a profession as a living. And, you know, when I was talking to Kirk, when Katie and I stopped out at Vonderhaar's, I had asked him about your chimney. Remember you got that 2 flue set up, one in the basement, one upstairs? Now's your chance, Ernie, to find out what's going on and what you can do to fix it.
Fully intend to exercise that privilege when he does show up. So he's going to join us at 8 o'clock. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, we talked a little bit about Halloween, the weather. We want to touch base again on the fall application, the fertilization. It's going to be probably next to impossible to get anything down this weekend. You got to at least let it dry out a little bit. Let your lawn dry out, because I know I got out of the truck last night after it had been raining for quite some time and stepped from the sidewalk into the grass. And
you're up to your knees.
Good thing I had waterproof boots on, because that was it. It was slushy in the lawn.
Yeah, and you definitely don't want to get out on it like this, because that's when you cause soil compaction. But what you might do with the moisture that we're receiving now in a few days, maybe you might want to rent an aerator,
mm-hmm.
and aerate your lawn. It'd be perfect.
One of the good things the rain will do is loosen up some of those plants in your landscape beds, and if you have any weeds that have made their way in there, they'll be easy to get out.
They're easier to pull. That's true. Yeah, it makes it easy to pull. That's a fact.
Or so I heard. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
We're going to talk about the plant of the week.
The plant of the week. We'll be right back.
Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, in and around the house, is ready with your plant of the week.
Let me guess, it's not the pumpkin, is it?
That's it, no. No. Actually, this is a very interesting specimen, because unlike others, it's deciduous. And the plant of the week is the Winterberry Holly. Red Sprite.
Ooh.
And when we say deciduous, that means it loses its foliage. Now, the other hollies that we're accustomed to seeing and talking about often are the evergreen varieties like Blue Princess, China Girl, and so forth, or the American Holly. But this particular holly is deciduous. It loses its foliage. But the beauty of this particular holly is this. She will bury up all up and down along the stems.
Mm-hmm.
So when the foliage drops, these beautiful, wonderful red berries are all up and down the stems of this particular holly. And last week, Bob and I were talking about our individual plants of the week. And one that I had talked about last week was the Japanese beauty berry, the Calocarpa. And it had the purple berries on it. I like things that berry because that creates a lot of interest at various times and points in the season. So I was talking about the Calocarpa, the Japanese beauty berry last week, and I thought, you know, how appropriate to talk about the Winterberry Holly, the one called Red Sprite. And I like Red Sprite because it's very versatile. Geez, I'll spit that out.
Wimbly, wimbly, wumbly.
I'll get that out. And the fact that it gets about 3 to 5 feet in height, and pretty much that in the same width, where a lot of the other hollies will get 6 to 8 feet. So I think it's a little bit better behaved, you know, from a size stature.
Mm-hmm.
But nonetheless, it's a beautiful, beautiful specimen. And it gets these red berries. And that's where it really shows off this time of year. But in order to get the red berries, you need a pollinator.
Mm-hmm.
You want to take a stab at that? It's going to be one of two.
A pollinator.
A pollinator.
A bee, a bird.
A male. You need a male. Any idea? We talked about this before, I think. All right. Jim Dandy.
That's a great song.
Jim Dandy or Southern Gentleman. Those are male versions of this particular variety of holly that will pollinate Red Sprite. So the Winterberry Holly, you need, and it's because they pretty much bloom about the same time. So that's why you need this in order for that to happen. There could be one close by, proximity-wise, in a neighborhood that might cross-pollinate with your holly.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting, you know, a lot of that can happen up to a mile apart.
Wow.
So,
but that's what I was just thinking is, well, I guess if you're going to put one of them there, you got to put both.
You need both. I would, in order to really get the berry production, it's best to put both.
Right.
And another female version of Red Sprite, another variety, is called Berry Heavy, which it too is very nice. It gets a little taller, you know, 6 to 8 feet and almost the same spread. A very beautiful specimen, and it will berry up very well too, hence the name. Berry Heavy. Whoa. There's also Berry Nice. It too, these gals,
Frankenberry.
They need Frankenberry.
How appropriate for the Halloween season.
There you go. They too, you know, it's either Jim Dandy or Southern Gentleman as the pollinator for these particular varieties of hollies.
Now, are there birds that feed off of these hollies?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So you're going to attract wildlife to the backyard.
Nice.
Certainly. So that's why I like things that berry up, because you get all these just seasonal interest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you got this beautiful green shrub throughout the season, and then once this particular shrub, the Winterberry Holly, drops its foliage, you have this beautiful, you know, look with these red berries all up and down the stems. And they're also great to decorate with during the holiday season.
I could just see that happening as, you know, once we clear the holiday of Thanksgiving and
right.
you're ready for a little decorating for Christmas, you go out and get
it. Makes things very festive. And we sell a lot of winterberry during the holiday season.
Uh-huh.
You know, we sell it in bunches and stems, and it really accents your evergreen, like your greens containers or your window boxes, so well. It's incredible. You just get that nice burst of red. And unlike using artificial stuff like that outside, I've seen where birds try to go to the artificial berries. it's not a good thing.
Yeah.
So using the natural berries is the route to go. So this is a great plant, and you can find this at your local garden centers and nurseries. And the thing of it is, you know, most of the time, this particular holly that we're talking about, the winterberry holly, during the spring and summer, it just doesn't grab your attention until you get into the fall season. And a lot of times you'll see these sit in the garden center until they berry up. And then in the fall, people see them in the garden center and they're like, these are beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're going after, those red berries. Now, thinking about some of the other types of hollies, you know, we're talking about the winterberry holly being deciduous, that it loses its foliage, which makes it unique in comparison to some of the other hollies. Like most homeowners you'll see that have evergreen hollies in their lawn or in their landscape, I should say, are either China Girls, Blue Princess, and they too need a certain pollinator. And Blue Princess, I really like Blue Princess a lot because the foliage on Blue Princess is a lot darker, deeper, richer green mm-hmm. than what you see with the China Girls. And it gets around 6 to 8 in height and about the same spread. And it will berry up relatively well also.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get a nice round of berries on it, but it holds its foliage, so it's evergreen. So for Blue Princess, you need Blue Prince to pollinate it. So whenever you're buying hollies, ask about the male. You can't forget about us guys, right, Ernie?
That's right.
Ask about the male. Now, the China Girl, pretty much the same in height, not as dark or deep of a green color, in my opinion, with the foliage like Blue Princess. But China Girl is it's a rather quick-growing holly. And the pollinator for that can be either Blue Prince or China Boy. So you got to find the pollinator.
Right.
That's where that really comes into play. If you're looking for a holly, there's a couple hollies. If you're looking for a holly here that gives you a little bit more of an upright growth habit, kind of pyramidal, look for Castle Spire. It gets about 8 to 12 feet in height and maybe about a 4-foot spread, give or take. But if you're using Castle Spire, you need Castle Wall as the male pollinator. Okay?
Yep.
And they all bloom at the same time. That's why you're looking for various pollinators.
Sure.
And we were talking about kind of upright hollies.
Mm-hmm.
Another one that's very interesting, too, is the Sky Pencil Holly. I don't know if you're familiar with that or not.
No.
Sky Pencil is very unique. It can get around 6 feet, give or take, with about a foot and a half to 2 foot spread max.
Okay.
Very unique. It's upright. And it has its application in the landscape somewhere if you have narrow, tight spaces.
Right.
But I might add this. Plant it somewhere where it's a little protected. You know, sometimes, especially that first season, I've seen it sometimes get really beat up in a bad winter.
Mm-hmm.
But usually that happens during that first year it's in the ground.
Sure.
It's going through its first winter and it's pretty severe. But try and plant it in a protected area, and I think you'll find that it performs a lot better.
So if someone comes to the garden center to pick these up now, are they going to see this season, or is this going to be a next season?
The berries.
It
could vary.
Yeah.
It just depends, you know, how well they buried up in the garden center, if they were close to, male pollinators.
Right.
Or if they came in late from a large nursery that sells hollies, and if they've pruned them back or not, it all varies.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So that's where that all comes into play. Now, the Sky Pencil Holly, if it berries, I've never seen it berry, and it's not what it's noted for. It's just for its unique growth habit pattern.
Right.
And another one, last but not least, that I really like a lot, it's a shorter-growing dwarf holly called Emerald Magic. And you might also find it at the garden center, sometimes under the name Little Rascal. So it gets about 2.5 to 3 feet in height and about the same spread. But I love the shiny, glossy look to the leaf on Emerald Magic.
Mm-hmm.
Very little maintenance at all, but a great specimen to have in the landscape. So we don't talk about hollies a lot. And when we plant hollies in the landscape, I want to encourage you to really, you know, mend the soil with a lot of peat moss. Get that acidic base. What happens to hollies is this. We have high pH levels. Our soil is really high. It's alkaline. And a lot of times when hollies are planted in heavy clay, you know, nutrients get locked up in heavy clay, high alkaline soils. And you might even say this, oh, that holly's been doing well for a couple of years, mm-hmm. but it's not been wet enough to where that clay soil has wreaked havoc on it. And all of a sudden, they just lock up. They don't pull in any nutrients because of the pH level and because they were planted in high clay soil.
Right.
And they get a little chlorotic. When we say chlorotic, we mean that the leaves start to yellow off a little bit. You might even see some veining in the leaves. Or you might see where it just struggles. So a lot of times, that's what's going on. And if that ground stays too wet for prolonged periods of time, hollies, you know, they can really suffer.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also set yourself up for Phytophthora, which is another soil type of disease. So when you're planting hollies, make sure that you have great drainage. That's so, so important. And add a lot of, like, peat moss to that existing soil.
Sure.
And you want to use that existing soil because ultimately that is what your shrub is going to grow in.
Mm-hmm.
But we just need to make it better.
There's some good stuff already.
There's
in
some
there.
Good stuff. And then I like to fertilize the hollies with Holly Tone. That's an acidic based type of fertilizer. And sometimes it's not a bad idea to give them a little bit of iron. That really helps promote and green them up. And it can kind of pull them out of that chlorotic look. So I love the Winterberry holly amongst the other evergreen hollies, and we've really not talked about them, I don't think so, before in the past, but that's our plan of the week.
Very good. That was all very interesting.
Hey.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We're going to take a very short break. We'll be right back. When we come back, we're going to talk about
I'm liking the rain here, and I'm going to tell you why.
All right, we'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Coming up in just about a half an hour, we have our special guest going to be joining us.
Yes, Kirk Vonderhaar, and we're going to talk about things you need to know about chimneys.
And fireplaces.
Going to be interesting. All the good stuff.
Tony, we have Jim on the line from Milford, home of the Milford Eagles, with a question about Cleveland pear trees. Hey, Jim, do you have one now, or are you looking for one?
Well, I have one right now, and I've had it probably about 9 years. And until this summer, it looked like I thought it probably should have looked. Everything was green. It bloomed right. But this year, it got very brown. The leaves have not yet fallen, but it's been very brownish, dark red in color. And other Cleveland pears that are around in the neighborhood do not look like this one. So I think it may have gotten a blight or something. So I do know that it's gotten plenty of water.
Mm-hmm.
I've made sure to water it.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know maybe what the problem is. I haven't noticed any insects being on it.
So do you have that, are you getting that burgundy color foliage on it right now? Darker colored, or is it brown?
It's more brown than burgundy, but there's a tint of that burgundy.
Okay. I wouldn't be too alarmed yet, but I want to ask you another question. You had mentioned blight, which they're pretty susceptible to blight. And typically you'll see that in the very tips of the, you know, the branches of the tree itself. And it will turn like a black color. Did you get any of that this year?
I think so, yes. I have noticed the tree being darker.
Yeah. You know, if you're starting to see some issues with blight, then what I would do is I would contact an arborist and have them treat it. And it's not going to be the answer to blight, but it's going to help kind of keep it at bay. Because the more often that happens year after year after year, it will be a slow decline on that tree, on that species.
Okay, so you need to go ahead and take care of that.
I would have somebody take a look at it, yes. Now, secondly, you know, another thing comes into play, and you had mentioned you water your trees and so forth, and a lot of times happy trees will hold on to their leaves a lot longer than trees that are stressed. And that's the built-in internal mechanism of a tree, is that when a tree's under a great deal of stress, guess what it does? It drops its foliage. It knows it needs to survive, and it can't hold on to its foliage. So, you know, that's what happens with trees. And you can have various trees in the same location or near one another in proximity. One that's the happiest or healthiest or gets the most amount of moisture or adequate moisture has a tendency to look a lot better than the others or holds on to its foliage a little longer. So, you know, that could be part of the element, too. A lot of things are environmental. But first and foremost, I would contact a certified arborist and just have them take a look at that tree and see what they suggest.
Okay, great. Thank you. Right,
you're welcome.
7.9 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Make sure you jump on our Facebook page and check out some of the pictures Tony's posted. And get ready at the 8 o'clock. We're going to talk a little bit about our fireplaces, our furnaces. I know ours have been active. We're usually on our street there in Villa Hills. We are traditionally the first ones to have fires in fireplaces.
You're the first one and the last one.
Exactly.
You even do it in the summer, don't you?
Yeah. It's just one of those great feelings.
Well, you know, I just thought this was a great topic. And when Katie and I had stopped out at Vonderhaar Chimneys and Fireplaces the other day, you know, it's that time of year and people are thinking about, you know, burning fires like yourself. And then last week we had Ryan Houlihan in from Arlinghouse Heating and Air, and people are starting to fire up the furnaces and so forth. People like yourself, you and Lisa, you're starting to crank up the old fireplace with wood. I have a gas fireplace. So there's some things that we really need to know and hone in on just to make sure that those are operating efficiently, properly, and that there isn't any risk of damage or anything, any harm, anything going awry.
Yeah.
You know, that's why when we talk about, I don't know when the last time you had your chimney checked or swept out.
Last year.
But, you know, that's something that all homeowners, especially if you burn wood, should do.
7.49 B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And, you know, it was interesting about the tree question there, too, because this is now the time where people who are starting to consider where they might move a tree. I know you told me, I asked you about a pear tree we have back in Pappy's backyard, and you said wait till the foliage drops off.
Mm-hmm. A lot less stress.
Mm-hmm.
Is your foliage still on that tree?
Just hanging on.
Just a smidge?
Yeah. Haven't really seen, other than recently when we started getting the rainfall, we've noticed a lot of leaves on the ground the last 24, 48 hours. But that pear tree is still hanging on.
Yeah, you're starting to see that. And actually the last week, especially with some cooler temperatures and so forth, and actually with the daylight hours becoming shorter, we're starting to see the chlorophyll change in the foliage of some of our trees. So we're starting to see a little bit of color. And it doesn't take long. I know that we have some maples in the garden center and they're just every day, you know, they're just gradually turning redder and redder and redder. And it's like, it's just beautiful to look at. I love it. So as a matter of fact, up in your neck of the woods at the city building.
Yeah.
I planted a tree up there a couple of weeks ago.
Wow.
Okay. Yeah, right there by the city. And your buddy Buck even said it was nice.
Buck Yelton. Good man. Good
man. He just pulled in after we were finishing up. But that was a Red Point maple that I planted up there.
Nice.
So see if it's...
I'll go by.
See if it's showing
you
a little bit of color yet. It should be. Beautiful tree, by the way.
Sure.
And before we went into the break, I want to say something. The rain that we're having now is perfect. It's a nice, steady, gentle rain. It's a good deep drink, and we need this as we go into the latter part of fall, setting things up for the winter, especially for our evergreens, things like boxwoods, arborvitae, you know, our pines and various things. This is so important. A lot of times, if something goes into the winter months under a great deal of stress and you have a very, very cold winter, it's really tough for that plant or that tree or that perennial to make it through the winter months when it wasn't set up to do so. And, you know, just having the right amount of moisture, this is important. This is music to my ears. Or I love seeing moisture like this.
Mm-hmm.
And something that Bob and I did not touch base on last week, and we wanted to in a worse way, was I wanted to just emphasize a little bit of importance to mulching during the winter months. And, you know, the school of thought is this. We say this often in the industry, the best time to mulch is when the ground's frozen. And that's very difficult to do. And I say that because at that point in time when the ground's frozen, who's really thinking about going out and buying mulch or if it's not frozen in a bag?
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? They're like bricks, believe me. Mulch freezes, soils freeze mm-hmm. in bags, and it's very difficult to do, and it's absurd of us to say, wait till the ground freezes. I think that's ludicrous. You know, I know there's a lot of people that do not mulch, period, and I can't emphasize this enough. You really need to mulch, and mulching your plants is so beneficial during the winter months, especially. Now, a lot of us think that mulch keeps the ground warm, like us putting on a coat when we go outside when it's cold. That is not even true whatsoever. What mulching does during the winter months is once the ground does freeze, it keeps it constant. So we don't want those fluctuations. You know, when you get those early spring days and the sun's out, it's a nice kind of a mild day.
Mm-hmm.
You don't want that ground to thaw. You gotcha. Want to stay constant until things get to where they need to be. Then we start to warm up. So it's keeping the ground constant. That's what's very important. During the spring and summer months, when you mulch, you're helping keep, you know, weeds suppressed. You're keeping weeds at bay. You're also keeping the soil temperatures cooler for your root systems of your trees, your shrubs, your perennials. And most importantly, during the summer months when it's hot, when you're watering or you get sufficient rainfall, mulch is retaining moisture for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's keeping things from drying out too soon. So mulching is so beneficial. Don't think that really, if you're not a type of person that mulches, that's best suited. Think about it. Mother Nature, what happens on the hillsides here when trees drop their leaves? They are essentially mulching themselves. And that all breaks down.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. So mulching is very important. And Bob and I were going to talk about that last week. And we got off on 20,000 different things. But, you know, get out to your local garden centers. Pick up a couple bags of mulch. If you still yet have the mulch for this upcoming winter,
mm-hmm.
put them in your garage where they're easy to work with. And then take it from there.
Right.
Because certainly when the ground freezes, those bags are frozen.
Right.
And it doesn't make it easy to do. I want to address that, point that out, because last week we didn't get the opportunity to do so.
Sure. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Need to pause for a moment when we come back.
I still think if you have yet to mulch, or not mulch, but fertilize your lawn, we still got plenty of time to do that. So get out to your local garden centers and nurseries. We want to talk about that. Before we get into the top of the hour with our friend Kirk Vonderhaar from Vonderhaar Chimney and Fireplaces, we'll be right back.
Today's Lawn and Garden Tip is brought to you by Fertilom. Here's Tony Works.
Fertilizing your lawn twice in the fall, September and November, is the most important thing that you can do to keep your lawn healthy and beautiful. Ohio State University research tells us fertilizing twice in the fall leads to better turf color during the fall and winter, earlier spring green up, increased shoot density, stronger root system, and increased energy reserves to endure the winter months. Hey, fall is fast approaching, and it's the best time to get into the Fertilom 3-Step Lawn Program.
Remember, 67 cents of every dollar spent locally stays local. And we encourage you to shop these local leaders.
McCabe's Greenhouse Lawrenceburg, Natorp Nursery Outlet in Mason, Plants by Wolf Angle Cincinnati, Right Way Nursery Burlington, Blooming Garden Center and Landscaping Cincinnati, Sharon Nursery in Mainville, White Oak Garden Center Cincinnati, Baker Feed and Seed Milford, Schwab Nursery and Garden Center Cincinnati, Mingus Feeding Greenhouses in Harrison, Robin Florist and Garden Center in Delhi, Holscher Hackman Garden Center in Cincinnati, and Maddox Garden Center and Landscaping in Florence, plus many more.
If you want a beautiful lawn, trust Fertilom.
When we go out to eat, we never agree on where to go.
I want burgers.
Pizza.
Tacos it is.
Dad, you always pick.
It's the same thing when we listen to the radio.
Classic rock.
Hip-hop.
Pop.
Guys, quiet.
The one thing we can agree on is we all want unlimited high-speed data. That's why we switched to MetroPCS. We got four lines with unlimited LTE data.
To upload more selfies.
I can play games nonstop.
Streaming my music.
We also got to choose four free phones.
I call the Samsung.
I want the LG.
Dibs on the Motorola.
I'm the best mom ever.
Switch to MetroPCS and get four lines with unlimited LTE data for just $100, period. No more data caps. Plus, you can choose four free phones from great brands. MetroPCS. Wireless. Figured out.
Coverage not available in some areas. Sales tax not included in phone price. Free phone requires port. Phone offer excludes numbers on the T-Mobile network. Rate plan requires new line of service. During congestion, a fraction of customers using more than 35 gigs per month may notice reduced speeds. Video streams at up to 40p. No tethering. See store for details and terms and conditions.
Routine isn't all it's cracked up to be. Sure, routine is fine when it comes to yoga classes and Sunday dinners. But the problem with routine is that it's predictable and expected. Routine tells us there's nothing special about the process. Routine says it's all the same. Problem is, breast cancer is none of that. That's why routine treatment for breast cancer just isn't enough. At the James at Ohio State, you get a multidisciplinary team that specializes not just in cancer, but breast cancer. Our world-renowned experts apply their collective thinking toward discovering the most effective therapies and delivering them at exactly the right time for you. They focus solely on the prevention, detection, and treatment of breast cancer, which means you can count on comprehensive care that's far beyond routine. For more information about breast cancer prevention, detection, and treatment at the James, visit cancer.osu.edu.
When I think of Bromwells for fireplaces, I think quality. Did you know they warranty their fireplace products for life? Yep, as long as you own it, they'll make sure it works perfectly and looks great too. I know they stand behind their product, and I know they'll stand behind me. They've been around for almost 200 years. I guess offering the best and standing behind it really does count for something. Ask them when you go in to design and pick out your fireplace about the details. Bromwells, downtown Cincinnati. Online at bromwells.com.
See it, choose it, love it with Estee Lauder's free gift, your choice. Worth up to $135, it's yours free with just a $35 Estee Lauder purchase. With seven pieces in all, it's an incredible value, and you can choose your gorgeous makeup trio. Come in store, and you'll also get a 10-day sample of Double Wear Longwear Foundation in your perfect shade. Quantities are limited, so don't miss the Estee Lauder free gift. Now through November 12th at select Peebles stores.
Let's get back to In and Around the House with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Call us at 749-B105.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And woke up this morning, you're looking out the window or the door. You're seeing a little rain, cold weather, just kind of, oh my. It's going to last for a couple of more hours, and then hopefully the rain's going to clear out. But it's still going to be cold, and we will see some sunshine, and that leads us back to the conversation about fertilizing.
Still plenty of time to do it. I seriously doubt if you're going to get two applications in. That's just for the mere reason that, you know, you need 6 weeks in between those fall, you know, applications for the lawn. But rest assured, get out to your local garden centers and nurseries, pick up that bag of Fertilume, the Lawn Food Plus Iron. It's just really going to add so much value and benefit to your lawn going into the winter months. And I can't say this enough. That's the most important time of the year for you to get into that three-step program from Fertilume. It sets the stage for next season. There's a lot of proven benefit to fertilizing in the fall. So don't think that it's a total wash. You don't have time to do it. There's plenty of time to do it. And those who have already put down that first application, you know that the next one's coming up here in another couple of weeks. And we're sure going to have some decent days in order to do that. Also, those of you who have purchased fertilizer from your favorite garden center or nursery that will hold those bags for you, don't forget you need to go in there and pick those up. I know that we're sitting on some. We've made some phone calls. It doesn't do you any good for those to sit at our place. You know, we're holding those for you just for a little convenient factor there. But, you know, you need to get those down. You need to go in there and pick those up. Last year, there were some people that didn't do it again, and I get worried about you folks. You need to pick it up. It's like buying fall bulbs for, you know, spring blooms.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you buy those bulbs, you can't leave them in a bag and in the garage. You know, you gotta, you gotta plant those. You gotta go in and pick up that fertilizer if the nursery that you bought it from is holding it for you. So don't forget. That's so, so important.
It's one of those things that I'm glad you bring up because it is sort of out of sight, out of mind. Mm-hmm. Everyone mulches a lot in the spring and then maybe a little dust up around the holidays so that when you have family and friends coming over, it looks good. And then you just sort of forget about it until it's too late.
It's easy to do, you know, and we get busy. Our lives are hectic. You know, we work many and long hours. But don't forget, you know, when you pick up a bag of fertilizer and they're holding it for you at the garden center, you need to get it down.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people forget that.
Yep.
And, you know, and aside from that, if you want to start fertilizing yourself, that's really easy to do. And those of us who have garden centers, we're willing to loan you a spreader like we do Ernie.
Yep.
Well, we haven't seen him this season yet. So I know he's not spreading it by hand.
No. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Our guest has arrived, so we need to pause for a moment to get him in and get him situated. And we're going to talk a little bit about fireplaces.
Yeah, with Kirk Vonderhaar. So hang in there with us. Give us a call at 749-B105. We'll be right back.
Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Great day to get to the locally owned, independently operated garden center. Get a little shopping going on. Tony was talking about how people are making the transition. You're going to start your Christmas tree sale here in about a week or two.
Oh, yeah, the artificial tree sale. It's hard to believe that. I mean, we've cranked through this whole year.
It just has flown by.
I just remember being in January and February. We're talking about the upcoming spring season, sowing, you know, like vegetable seeds and various flower seeds. And now we're talking about shutting things down, putting things to bed, you know, and the seasons are, you know, they're changing rapidly. So, I mean, we really didn't have much of a fall here yet. As of lately, until just the last couple of days, it's finally cooled down what's typical of a fall season.
Mm-hmm.
And having said that, I know you like burning wood all the time.
I do.
And this time of year, I thought that it would be appropriate to talk about our fireplaces, our chimneys, and so forth. And we have our friend here, Kirk Vonderhaar from Vonderhaar Fireplace Stoves and Masonry. Good morning. How was the drive in?
It was just great. Had a little wreck on 75, but I was able to get around it quickly, and I'm here, thank goodness.
not bad, is it?
No, not bad at all.
Early on Saturday mornings, the traffic's not too bad, but it's easy to get into downtown Cincinnati, that's for sure.
Well, thanks for coming in. And Tony said you paid a little visit to him and checked some things out.
I did.
I'm sorry. Let me back up just a bit. Give us a little contact information about you and your business.
Okay. Well, Vonderhaar Fireplace Stoves and Masonry, we've been around for a little over 20 years. We're family-owned. My brother Greg is the true entrepreneur in the family. He founded the company, actually took over a small chimney sweep and restoration company that was actually going out of business in the Blue Ash area. And I joined Greg and his wife Brittany about 15 years ago. And we've grown a little bit every year. Up to today, we have four hardworking ladies in the office, a crew of about 10 installation and technicians, and four mason crews. A little bit what we do. Right now, we're located in Westchester in Old Pisgah, and we've been there for about 15 years, just north of Sharonville. And we do service all the greater Cincinnati area, northern Kentucky areas, and a little part of Indiana there. But we are a complete chimney and fireplace restoration service. And what I mean by that is we do restoration work, meaning we do exterior and interior repairs caused by weathering, lightning strikes, chimney fires to your chimney. In fireplace, we resolve leaking issues, smoking issues, draft issues with a natural draft, your gas furnace or gas fireplace, creosote issues. We restore chimneys. We rebuild chimneys, tuck pointing, flashing repairs, you know, helping you with water leaks. We install as simple as putting a chimney cap on your chimney or chase covers. We reline fireplaces. Reline gas and oil furnaces. We do about 3,000 to 4,000 chimney sweeps a year.
Wow.
And we also do gas tune-ups. And, of course, we have the retail side of our business where we're actually we sell and install wood-burning fireplace and stoves, pellet stoves, direct vent gas fireplaces, gas log sets, both vented and ventless. And we provide that facelift, the remodeling services for your fireplace. So we can install tile or cultured stone, sell and install mantles and fireplace doors, fireplace accessories. You know, we replace your old builder grade gas or wood fireplace, make it better looking and more efficient. And then we can cultured stone, tile, and put a new mantle on there. Pretty much, if it has to do with your chimney or fireplace, we can probably fix it, replace it, or just make it look a lot nicer.
Well, that's a great way to put that.
So there's a lot of things you guys do.
So do you have a website? What's the website?
We do. It's www.vonderhaar.com. And we're just one letter away from the famous caterers in town. So they're Vonderhaars with an S. We are Vonderhaar. Just .com.
Mm-hmm. And phone number?
513-755-7545.
So I'm sure Tony has told you a couple of things about my wife and I. We love burning wood. We have two wood burners in the house. It's an old ranch house. And she, if the temperature drops below 50, there's a fire in the fireplace. She can't wait to get one started, and there's been one in the fireplace for 7 days, 8 days now. And let me start with, how often should you get your fireplace or your chimney cleaned?
Well, it's recommended about every 40 to 45 fires, which for most people is every 2 years, believe it or not. It doesn't seem like a lot of fires, but some people burn all the time. If you burn all the time during the winter when it's cold, you should get it done annually.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't use the fireplace and you have masonry fireplaces, it's important to get it inspected at least once every 4 years, three or 4 years, because it's not so much the interior that you're worried about, it's the exterior, where if you don't have a chimney sweep coming out to actually sweep and inspect your chimney,
mm-hmm.
then you should go on the top, take a look at the exterior brick and block.
Tell me what you found at Tony's.
Well, Tony's chimney is in relatively very good shape. What happens is his crown, which is a concrete pad on top of the chimney,
mm-hmm.
had some cracks in it, and it's a tapered crown. And he had a few mortar joints that were missing, but the bricks looked very good. The critical thing about the crown is it acts like an umbrella for your chimney.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a lot of times builders will put what they call a tapered crown. So the chimney, like I was telling Tony yesterday, is the last thing the brick layers are doing. And when they get to the top, they usually put a tapered Portland cement crown on, not mortar, mm-hmm. but Portland cement,
mm-hmm.
And go to the next job and start laying more bricks, right?
Yeah.
So the critical thing is, though, you have a flue tile that comes out of your chimney, one or more, multiple. It's made of clay. It expands and contracts at a different rate than that concrete pad does. And just like your concrete on your sidewalk cracks, you get cracks and shrinkage in that crown. And that crown is critical to your chimney. Like I said, it acts like an umbrella. Well, what happens is, I showed pictures of Tony of his chimney. He actually has a mortar crown. So whoever put that together, and instead of using Portland, they use the same material or mortar that they're using to put the bricks up.
Mm-hmm.
Not as solid.
It must have been late Friday afternoon, and they were like, hey.
Might have been.
Got a little more mud in that? We'll throw that right on here, Jim. Let's get to the bar.
I just think it's so coincidental and ironic that you're visiting with us today on the show, and thank you, by the way, and you stopping out yesterday and taking a look at the anatomy of my fireplace, because I don't think a lot about it. Now, we burn gas versus, Ernie, you burn wood, mm-hmm. which I think somewhat advantageous from this standpoint. We don't have to clean our flue out like a wood-burning fireplace like Ernie would. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I've not been up on the roof in a while to really see that. And
Don't blame you.
Mm-hmm.
You can look at that on our Facebook page where the photos that Kirk had taken yesterday. Yeah, it's very evident that crown is cracked.
Mm-hmm.
And the only time you get damage to your chimneys in the winter, really, the freeze-thaw cycles.
Right.
So if you let water into that crown through the cracks,
right.
The bricks and mortar naturally try to absorb it and release it out to the atmosphere. Well, it gets frozen in the winter, it gets frozen inside there, and you'll get pop brick faces. Your mortar joints will pop first, And a lot of times, especially when you don't use it and you don't have it serviced, what will happen is in the springtime, you know, after it's been going bad for 5-6 years, you'll actually see flakes of bricks or mortar on the ground when you're cutting your grass. That's when people call us. Usually by that time, you look up and from the roof line up, looks like somebody's chiseled all the bricks for about a quarter of an inch. It's called a pop brick face.
Mm-hmm.
So that, you know, yours was not in that bad a shape. And there's certain products you can put on crowns, like a crown coat or crown seal, if you have something good to put it on. I mm-hmm. talked to you about that mortar crown is very sandy,
right.
and usually that won't work. And it's a lot more efficient and easier to do what they call a form crown. You know, so it's like.
Did you have to take that off to repair it?
In his scenario, I didn't repair it yet.
Okay.
But yeah, basically, you set scaffold up, you tear that crown off. You put forms around. I do what they call a form crown. So what happens is I'm like pouring a sidewalk, for lack of a better term, on your sidewalk. Easier said than done.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, I'm pouring a form crown where it's going to be thicker than he had before. It has a drip edge on it, and it extends beyond the crown. So it's sort of like acting like your soffit does for your house,
mm-hmm.
you know, sort of protecting that chimney. It's a two-step process. You go one day, tear it off. Set up, tear off, pour the crown, and come back in a few days and take the forms off.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. You can check those pictures out by going to our Facebook page. And we'd ask you about how often you need to have that that at least inspected. What about any other servicing? I mean, you know, the chimney sweep comes in, they clean it out, and there's an inspection there also?
Yes, there's an inspection for every chimney sweep, and there's different levels of inspections. Usually, when the chimney sweep comes in, sweeps the fireplace, which is the firebox, the smoke chamber, which is the area above the damper, and then the flue tiles going up through there, mm-hmm. they're visually inspecting the smoke chamber area to make sure there's no voids or pockets where smoke and gas can go,
mm-hmm.
And the flue tiles to make sure they're not cracked, or they don't have any mortar joints missing in between the flue tiles. And we'll talk about what you were saying before about your scenario that you have. That's mm-hmm. it's very common for people who have two fireplaces. And, you know, why don't you go in a little bit of what your scenario yep. is.
We'll do that when we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys, talking fireplaces. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Kurt Vondahar in with us. We're talking about fireplaces and flues and chimneys and the do's and don'ts. And I wanted to ask you, I know Tony talked to you about that. As we mentioned earlier, my wife and I burn a lot of firewood. We have an old ranch house that has two fireplaces in it, one downstairs, one upstairs. And it doesn't happen often. But on occasions when Lisa has a fire upstairs, when you go downstairs, you get a whiff of smoke. It's not like it fills the room. It just is one of those things where you go, well, I shouldn't be smelling that down here. And Tony said that you hit the nail right on the head as soon as you described that. Both of those chimney flues are the same height. How often do you see that? And how do you fix it?
Well, most people don't have two fireplaces. Most have one.
I feel special now.
So you do. you know, there's a lot of reasons why people get downdrafts. And basements are, since they're on the lower level, your house breathes from taking air down from the below and going up through your roof.
Mm-hmm.
And the inside and outside pressure of your house always try to equal each other. You know, you have this 12x12 flue or 9x13 flue up top on top of your chimney.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not drafting up with warm, it's coming down with cold.
Right.
So when you have two flue tiles real close to each other, if you have one, your upstairs, which most people do, they're burning their upstairs fireplace,
mm-hmm.
and the other, and it's cold out, and they have a down. It if the wind's going the right way,
yeah.
it could suck it right down, and
yeah.
you get a smell. One easy solution, if the issue really is that, and it's not like voids in between your two flue tiles where they're doing some cross venting inside the chimney, you put what they call an extend a flue on there. And it's like a very tall cap that will raise up the height of the fireplace chimney flue you use the most,
mm-hmm.
a foot or 2 foot. And so it's releasing the heat up above the other one, and
right.
hot air rises.
So you get past that draft area that would pull it back down into the house.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
That's interesting. And is that something, a service you guys provide?
Yeah, it's like a cap, but a big one. Mm-hmm. It's like a big, tall cap. That's what it is. It's a big, tall cap. That's the easy solution, sure, if that's what the solution is. You know, people are tightening up their basements. They remodel their basements. Mm-hmm. They put those glass block windows in there, and they're changing the dynamic of the airflow. And when you have that 12x12 flue or 9x13 flue, your house is looking for makeup air. And guess where it's going to take it? Your damper, even if it's closed, it's not airtight.
No.
So.
Yeah. And this happens more often than not right when she starts the fire upstairs. And I guess it's because that air is just starting to heat up in the flue and starting to go up. And the first place for it to go is that downdraft down in the basement, just like you pointed out.
Absolutely.
And once the fire is cooking and it's been burning for a while, you don't notice it.
It's warm. Yeah. It warms maybe a little bit the other flue if it's real close by. So it's creating an upward draft both ways.
Yeah, these houses were built around 60, 61. And in that probably two or three street area back in old Villa Hills, they all had fireplaces, and most of those had two fireplaces like ours. We know a lot of people on our street and visited the house. That was pretty much the norm in 61.
That's brick block construction.
Yes,
they don't make them like that. They're bunkers.
Yeah, and they are, and yeah. It just is one of those wonderful things, and I tell this story quite often when a lot of our friends will say, yeah, you get rid of those burners, you know you're not saving any energy, and that's not the point. The point is that soothing, relaxing feeling you get when you come in on a cold winter's day or night and you've been outside and it's miserable, you sit next to that fire.
Well, it's funny wonderful. You say that. I very often talk to a customer and say, you know, What makes this fireplace so important is that deep down inside, we're all cavemen.
That's it.
And we like to see a fire.
Mm-hmm.
And some people just like the ambiance of the fire, which you're getting.
Yeah.
You know, a fireplace is very inefficient, about 20% efficient. You have two masonry fireplaces, which really gives you more options than most people have, because mm-hmm. you can convert that to something more efficient, like putting a gas insert or a wood insert if you really want the heat.
Right.
You know, you don't need the heat. You're doing it for the looks.
Right.
And that's completely fine.
Mm-hmm.
You have more value in your house when you have a fireplace that's functioning in one way or another than without a fireplace, because people look at that and that becomes a center point to their house. People
sure.
gather around fires. People like to see a nice fire.
Mm-hmm.
People like warmth,
yeah,
especially when it's cold outside.
I can tell you, when we welcome people to our house in the dead of winter, that's the first place they walk to.
Absolutely.
Is they go stand right next to the fire and go, oh, I wish I had one of
this
these.
This is what it feels like to be Ernie.
That's right.
Yeah.
You know, and there's a lot of work involved. You got to cut the wood. You got to split the wood. You got to bring it in and out. You got to clean the fireplace. But all of that pales by comparison when you get that feeling. I can come home mad at the world, and within the first 5 minutes, I'm sitting in that chair next to the fireplace, and I'm so much more relaxed.
And that's a good point to bring up about where you said you've already started burning. Very critical, a couple things that everyone should do. And, you know, we talked about inspections.
Mm-hmm.
It's important if you've been burning over the last year or two and a considerable amount. And we've had some very mild winters the last two winters, but people still burn.
Mm-hmm.
Is to get it inspected if you've been burning. You know, if you're at that 35-40 fire level, and just to make sure that you don't need it swept.
Right.
And the second critical thing is what wood you're bringing into the house to burn.
That's a really good point. Give us some tips about what to burn and what to avoid.
Well, the most critical thing is dry wood,
mm-hmm.
okay? And dry wood, what you've heard, seasoned wood, basically means once anything more than 6 inches in diameter is split, so you're supposed to split anything more than 6 inches in diameter, you're supposed to dry it.
Mm-hmm.
And dry it for a minimum of 8 months, okay? So basically, how you dry it is it's off the ground,
mm-hmm.
so it's not wicking water up and rotting that wood. And then you see racks of people who have their firewood. And then you're supposed to take a little tarp just over the top.
Right.
So spring, summer, and fall, you have this wood drying for at least 8 months. If you buy wood from someone right now, the odds are that it's not seasoned. Now, they could say, oh, I split this 9-10 months ago, but they probably put it in a stack taller than this building,
mm-hmm.
and they're pulling from it. And unless you're lucky enough to get that wood that was on the outside, it's not dry. Here's the critical thing about wet wood. When you have moisture, and dry wood is typically, they say anything less than 20% moisture content. Now, no one carries around a moisture meter, right? So, you know, if you've burned wood for a long time, you know when you hit the two dry pieces of wood together, sort of sound like baseball bats. Mm-hmm. And when they got a lot of moisture in there, they sort of thud. You can always tell when you try to start wet wood because it starts sizzling and popping. Mm-hmm. It's hard to get started.
Yeah. And a little more smoke than normal.
But that is not a good thing. And I'll tell you why. When you burn wood that is heavy in water content, basically what's happening is, number one, that fire is burning cooler because it's converting that water and that wood to water vapor, right? So it's sending up a lot of moisture, and with the particulates of what you're burning, you know, the wood that's going up with the fireplace, it burns a cooler fire. So what happens is you get condensation and creosote will form in that flue and in that smoke chamber. Mm-hmm. And that's what causes chimney fires. Yeah. And the only place made to take a fire in a whole chimney system is that firebox. Yeah. You're not supposed to get any fires in that smoke chamber. And what happens once that creosote forms, once it gets to a certain level, it can catch.
Yeah.
So good dry wood's number one. You want to burn good hardwood. So you don't want to put your Christmas tree up there. And every year we have one or two people who, some know it, and they just don't want to take the tree outside, but some of them don't know it. And that's not their business, and they figure, oh, I got wood, I'll put it in there. And when you put pine, especially dry Christmas tree, inside of it, it will light that thing up. And the flames will be shooting out of that flue, even if it didn't have any creosote in it to begin with.
Yeah.
It'll crack the flue tiles.
And that includes sweeping up needles and saying, I'll just pitch these in the fire here. That'll be great. It'll be a wonderful smell.
It is.
Sirens are a wonderful sound, but you don't want to hear them coming to the house.
Are the Duraflame logs, don't they have something that will clean your chimney? And don't they just, you know, in addition to the Duraflame logs, are they cracked up to be what they say they are? Or what's your take on that?
Well, the Duraflame logs are the pressed ones that you can buy at Kroger's and all the different stores, and there's different brands, and those burn very clean, and they're very easy for people who don't want to mess with the wood. You're never supposed to combine those with wood, though. You're supposed to burn those separate. You read the directions, because it's a controlled burn with those Duraflame logs, so you don't mix them. Now, the question about, there's a product out there called a chimney sweep log,
mm-hmm.
They do not take the place of a physical sweeping because they may work to break up a little bit of the creosote within the first few feet, but to physically, they do not do anything to take that ash off of that flue or remove it.
Right.
It doesn't make it disappear. So years ago, we looked at that, and even on the package, it says does not take the place of a normal mm-hmm. chimney sweep and inspection. So,
mm-hmm. So it's a nice idea. But get a chimney sweep.
Yes.
Is it dirty when you sweep a chimney inside the homeowner's home, or what's the process there?
It's not. We bring in Vax,
mm-hmm.
In some cases we will actually at the other end of our vac will take a hose and send it out a door or a window, and that's not so much for the smoke, but it's for the smell. We use a higher level. Filter,
mm-hmm.
So it traps it, and we're cleaning out the filters multiple times during the day. But we tarp off around the area. Yesterday, as a matter of fact, this is our busiest, crazy time of the year. Mm-hmm. So I don't do it very often anymore, but I was the chimney sweep yesterday. So we had seven or eight guys around the city, and we had just too many going on. And it was one family that had three houses and four chimneys to sweep, and my guy just wasn't going to get there in time. They had to go at a certain time, so I said, okay, I'll go. And I happened, because I'm involved a lot of times on the first line of the jobs, that we rip out old people's fireplaces and we cover their furniture and everything. Well, I had some of the plastic wrapping, and I walked into this guy's house, and he had white carpeting, white couches. And I was like, oh, you're a chimney sweep's nightmare.
Oh.
And he just looked at me. And the guy was a retired judge. I said, all right, so I better make sure I do a good job here, or they're going to put me away, because it was in Kentucky.
Yeah.
So I covered their couches around the fireplace. Not usually necessary, but, you know, white will show everything.
Oh, yeah.
And then I tarped off, put the vac in, and everything's about being controlled. That vac is used to keep all the debris from getting out of that fireplace. Mm-hmm. If it's really dirty, I can close a half of a door, you know, and it's all going slow. But yeah, it's if something happens where you get any in the house, it's an accident.
So is there a brush mechanism that goes up in there? And
well, there's multiple types of ways you sweep your chimney. There, you know, the old fashioned way, you see the black sticks and we still use those.
Top hats.
I do have one top hat, and you know, it's funny, people from Europe and England, when we first started years ago, people come over and touch me on the shoulder and they said, oh, you know, and I was wondering why people were tapping me so much. You know, that's good luck. And, you know, in Europe, when you touch your chimney sweep, it's supposed to be good luck. But we use a product called the Viper, and it's actually like on a reel.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little bit more efficient and quicker, and there's a tension to it. And so there's different size brush heads, and you can send up the metal brush head into the flue tile in the masonry fireplace, and it's a nylon brush for the prefab. You know, some people actually do some sweeps themselves, which mm-hmm. is fine. But if they have a wood stove or a pellet stove or a prefab wood-burning fireplace, you don't want to use a metal brush head on it because you'll scrape that stainless steel liner. That's just used for flue tiles. And once you ruin your liner, you ruin it.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Have our friend Kurt Bondahar in with us. We're talking firewood, fireplaces, chimneys, and chimney sweeps. We need to pause for a moment. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Here, our friend Kurt Bondahar with us, and we've been talking about fireplaces.
That we have. And with that, Kurt, should every chimney have a cap?
I would say everyone should. And the reason why is it keeps critters out, it keeps leaves out and mm-hmm. debris for the most part. And it keeps a lot of moisture out. Not 100%, but it keeps a lot of the moisture out.
So, got it.
Once, you know, in the spring, we'll get a flurry of calls. We'll get a flurry of calls and for caps. And usually it's because someone has a bird in their flue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the season where they're having babies in the springtime and in the summer. And we actually can't take those out. Like the chimney finches and the chimney swallows that actually tend to go into fireplaces, they're endangered, and there's a fine if you take them out. So they won't hurt you. You just keep your damper closed. They'll be gone in 5 or 6 weeks, and the babies actually climb up the flue and jump off just like they do off a tree, and then we get in there and clean it out. Some people actually enjoy it, and they have these chimney swallows because the babies will come back the next year to have their own. You know, they enjoy it every year. It's something they do every year. Yeah, we get them every year, and we just wait for them to go, and then we clean out our flue.
I've never heard this before. They're endangered, or
you're not allowed to take them out. Yeah, you get fined. Now, people will say, well, I won't tell on you, but, you know, I don't want to kill a bird, and I don't want to kill a bird, and I'd rather just let them do their due course. Now, the birds aren't the big issue, though.
Yeah.
It's when the raccoons come.
Mm-hmm.
Raccoons are horrible, and I have a quick story to tell you. There's a family that I know, I've known their kids, and I go to church with their parents, and they live on the same street that my brother does. So I'm driving by their house one day, and this is probably 12, 13, 14 years ago. And I look over, and they don't have a chimney cap on their chimney. And so I say, well, I'm just going to go up there and put one on. I'm not even going to tell them. I'm not going to charge for it because, you know, I've known them forever. Well, I see him at church the next day or the next week, and he says, hey, Kirk, did you put that cap on my chimney? And I'm thinking, well, I don't. I'm feeling all good about myself. And all of a sudden he said, well, we had a raccoon in there, and we walked in the house, and he didn't know he had a raccoon, but he did. He had a raccoon, and he walked in the house, and I guess his flue was open, and this raccoon was just standing right there, right outside his fireplace. And I said, oh boy, I don't even want to hear the rest of this story because I know what kind of destruction they can do. And he said, well, I opened my door, and he just walked right out. I said, well, thank goodness, I will never put a cap on another person's chimney without them knowing for the rest of my life.
It makes me remember an old neighbor, friend of mine, Tom Harney, God bless his soul. You mentioned about the swallow, there was a small bird that got caught in one of his chimneys, lived a couple of doors up from us. And he had a young granddaughter and thought, you know, well, we're going to help it get healthy, you know, so they kept it for a little bit till it's got its wings and stuff and fed it and the whole nine yards. And then it came time that, well, we got to release it. So they had a little release ceremony where they went outside, and in that area of Villa Hills, there are several hawks in the area. And this, you could not have written this as like a horror film. Tom was telling me that they opened the cage, the little bird jumped out and kind of flopped around on the ground a little bit. Down comes the hawk out of the tree and snatches the bird and carries it away in front of his granddaughter.
Oh,
funny now, but a horrible story. So, you know, just leave them where they are. They'll get out eventually. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Do we have Jane on the line, Kurt, who has a liner question for you? Hi, Jane. Thanks for the call.
Good morning again.
Good morning.
Sorry,
again.
Guys, but I was just listening about the chimneys.
Uh-huh.
Our house is 117 years old.
Wow.
And it's about four stories counting the basement. Now, they had previously, like, two fireplaces in every room, but we covered them up. But I was wondering, if on the old fireplaces like that, do you put like new liners all the way down, or how would you repair those?
Well, that's a great question. We were just talking about that a minute ago off air. You know, flue tiles really came around when you see those orange flue tiles or yellow flue tiles coming through your top of your chimney. And in 1910, 1915, prior to that, your house, you had a fireplace in every room. It could have been one of those small coal baskets. I don't know. What part of town are you in?
Dayton, Kentucky.
Okay. So are the fireplaces really small or are they larger? Are they about a foot and a half wide? You know?
Maybe 2 foot.
Okay. A lot of people had coal burners back in the day in that area. But
I think they started it in the basement to keep the house warm.
Right. But what happens is your chimney, if you don't have flue tiles in there, it's not code to burn anything. And what they used to do is they would build what they called a brick wife. So you see your chimney, and say you have four different fireplaces throughout the house, or three even going through there. They would build a brick wall in between each for each appliance or each fireplace. Mm-hmm. And then they would parge it as they went up, and that was your flue. Well, after 100 years, those guys just deteriorate. The brick falls, and pretty much your chimney is inoperable. You shouldn't be using it.
Yeah, that's why we covered them up, because they kept,
falling apart. Yeah, you got brick debris, and your house would get all dusty.
Yeah.
So in some cases, you can reline those, and a lot of it depends on how large the width is and how much you want to pay, because it can get very expensive to reline a chimney. Anywhere from $8,000 to $18,000, depending on how tall it is and how much work has to be done and to actually get the liner in there.
Right.
Now, what a lot of people do, if you have an inoperable fireplace, if you don't have a real big firebox, you can convert that in a living room or a family room to a ventless system where you're not actually using that flue tile anymore. But what you're doing is ventless works the same way as if you cook with gas right now.
Okay.
When you cook with natural gas in your oven, it's a 99.9% efficient burn. And what a ventless log set is just that. And in the older houses, they work real well, because usually the older houses aren't real airtight, so you don't have to worry about any of the odor that you get from ventless sometimes, because it dissipates. And the ventless gives you a source of heat, actually.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to worry about the flue as long as you have your combustibles, which is your mantle and anything. You don't have any wood too close by. As long as it's installed properly, that's a great way to actually let you use your fireplace again.
Mm-hmm. And you can burn wood in the ventless.
No. It's not ventless. That's gas.
It's gas.
Yes, okay. Ma'am. It's actually a gas log set. And they have, for the smaller ones, they actually have what they had back in the day when you had that house. If it was a coal basket, they have ventless coal baskets. It's called Evans Vent-Free Coal Baskets.
Mm-hmm.
We've put a lot of those in throughout northern Kentucky and greater Cincinnati, the Clifton Gaslight District.
I'm like Ernie. I like the wood burning. I love the smell of it and love to watch it. And
Well, there's other things you can do. You can reline them, but like I said, you talked about having a three-story house And, you know, depending on what the condition of that chimney is, it could be expensive to try to change
sure
that
I
over.
Could repair it. That's, you know.
Right. The
I
other
mean,
thing.
It's almost, that would cost as much as the house is worth.
Right.
You can always have it looked at, Jane. You never know. You know, yeah. Just have it looked at. It may not be as bad as you may think that it is.
I was thinking in the future. I mean, we've kept the house in pretty good shape. It's you know, it looks good. And we've done a lot of repairs on it. But I was just thinking in the future, if someone wanted to open that up, how, you know, if they could do that.
Well, you know, you could call us. You know, this is our crazy busy time of the year right now. Once the season's over in spring, that's when we do a lot of our restoration work on the exterior, get started on it at least.
Yeah.
So give us a call. We'll come out to where you are, and we'll give you an honest opinion on what you have and give you some suggestions that you can take with you and maybe do something with them in the future.
Okay.
Thanks, all right, Jane.
Guys.
Thank you.
All right, Jane.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. We have our friend Kurt Vondahar from Vondahar Fireplace Stove and Masonry. You can go to their website, vondahar.com. You can reach them at 513-242-1110. And, Kurt, you kind of caught my ear when you were talking about that old house, because I've noticed it, and I didn't know coal baskets. When we come back, I want to find out a little bit more about that. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And our friend Kurt Vondahar has joined us this morning. We're talking about fireplaces. And, guys, we have Jack from Cold Springs on the line. Jack, you've been told that your firebox is unusable. How old's your house?
My house is built right around 73.
Okay.
And it's been 20 years since we had the flue clean.
Right.
So I had a company come in, take a look at it, and the guy supposedly from the fire, one of the guys that helped us with the fire department. And I got that ceramic brick in there. And he said the firebox is not usable. My wife had to sign a paper saying that we wouldn't use it. And he said you can actually push the bricks and move them. I can't. But he said they actually move, so you can't do anything with it. He even told me I couldn't put a gas fireplace in it.
Any suggestions?
Well, sure. First of all, you know, if it's just the fact that the bricks, the fire bricks, and the refractory bricks, basically, in a chimney or a fireplace, if they are not stable, those can be rebuilt. So we rebuild rear walls all the time, side walls. So really would have to come out and take a look at it. But if that was the only reason why they said that your chimney was inoperable because your firebox, the bricks were loose, that is critical, because if your bricks fall when you're making a fire, that's sort of a, you know, that could be an issue. But it's all fixable. We can rebuild that. We do a lot of them every year. I guess my big thing is it's been 20 years since you've had anybody look at it. You know, we come out to your house for a very reasonable fee, and we can do a full inspection on your interior and your exterior of your chimney. And if you wind up doing any work with us, you actually get that reimbursed, your inspection fee. So you actually, it pays for it. But if that was the only reason that they said you couldn't use it, it's fixable, and it's not out of this world price-wise.
Okay. That's what I want to find out, because the flue I know is good, because we had that rebuilt about 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. We didn't, a part of it, because it, you know, how the brick all pops and all that stuff. We rebuilt half the chimney.
Well, you rebuilt the exterior of the brick, right? They left the flues in there, and they tore out the bricks and rebuilt it back up. So what you want to do is, you know, there's two things you can do here. How tall, is it a ranch, two-story house?
No, actually, the part of it, it's part of the building is one-story, part of it's two-story.
Okay.
It's like bi-level, tri-level, something like
sure.
that.
Sure, yeah.
And the chimney's only one level.
Okay, so it probably, you could do a video inspection since you haven't had it used in a long time, but at least get it visually inspected, look interior, smoke chamber, flue tiles, and make sure those all look good. I know you did the outside, but when you do the outside, mm-hmm. you're not really doing anything to the interior. So, okay. But yeah, we'd be more than happy to come out and take a look at it.
Jack, okay. let me give you their phone number.
Yeah, if you would.
Yep, it's 513.
Okay.
242-1110.
1110.
And you can get on Vondahar.com, which is their webpage.
Okay.
And give them a call. They'll get you squared away.
I appreciate it.
All right. Thanks, Jack. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. And we have another call. We have Chris on the line from Newport. Chris, it says here you have an issue with a water heater pipe that's in the chimney. It's no longer pulling after replacement. What's going on there?
Yes, sir. Well, I was doing some work down there, and I messed up my B vent that was where the hot water heater was going into the chimney. I messed that up, and when I was going to replace, I saw that my clean-out needed cleaned out, too. It had the brick and whatnot, debris. And I cleaned that out, saw, when I turned out all the lights, I saw the light come in from both holes. And when I put it back together, it's not sucking in no more. I mean, there's no debris in the clean-out or the hole above the clean-out where my B vent's going into. And I do not know why. It's not sucking in no more.
Tell me this. Do you have a high-efficiency furnace now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Was it at one time using the same flue as the hot water heater? Or was it two different holes?
Two separate chimneys, yeah. The furnace is running one, and the hot water heater is running to the other.
When you say two different chimneys, two different flues or two physically different chimneys, or were they side by side?
No, sir. Two different chimneys on two different sides of the house.
And how old is the house?
No more than 50, I'd say.
Okay, so you do have flue tiles coming out of there, out of the top of your chimney, clay flue tiles. So when you looked at your clean out, what were you grabbing out of your clean out?
Brick and whatnot.
Well, if it was brick, you probably, you know, typically you don't get brick out of a clean out if it has a flue tile in it. If it was a brick wife, meaning that we were talking before about the older houses, how they didn't have flue tiles. If you get brick,
that's what it is. I don't think it has a flue tile.
Okay, so what happens is if your bricks are caving in there, your chimney might be more than 50 years old. But if it doesn't, you can reline those, okay? And what happens is if you don't have – the chimney needs a smooth path to get out. And if for some if for some reason that the chimney, you know, not only does it need a smooth path, it has to be 2 feet higher than anything 10 feet around it for a natural draft. So it has to be higher up there. It has to be – you can't have – trees right next to it. You can't have another addition right next to it without extending it, because you could get downdrafts that way and air pushes down. But if you have voids and pockets in that chimney where you said you're getting bricks out, I thought you were going to say you got dirt out or leaves or something.
I did get a few leaves and a lot of what seemed to be dirt mortar and pieces of brick. I mean, it was a full brick, but it definitely was the brick falling apart.
There might be some voids there. What we do in case of gas, you can put it's either a 3 or 4 inch pipe coming off your hot water heater typically, if your chimney is in decent shape, you know, usually with flue tiles, we'll drop an aluminum liner down there, and metal heats up a lot faster than the larger flue tile or brick wife does, and it'll draft really fast. If the bricks are not in the best of shape and could cave in, we'd put a heavier duty stainless steel liner in there that would be crush resistant.
All right. Is there a number I can get?
There is. 513.
Okay.
242.
Yes, sir.
1110. You can also jump on their webpage, vondahar.com. VondahaR.com. And good luck. Let us know. Follow up with us, okay?
All right. Thank you.
749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. And a lot of great questions this morning. Obviously, we've touched a nerve here. A lot of people want to use their fireplaces or are uncertain whether they're safe or not. Really great to have you come in. And one of the things that I wanted to ask you about is the coal box, and we're going to get to that as soon as we come back. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll be right back. Welcome back in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We have our friend Kurt Vondahar in from Vondahar Fireplace, Stove, and Masonry. You can go to vondahar.com. You can give them a call at 513-242-1110. And we've had a lot of great calls, and I wanted to retouch on something. My wife and I absolutely love these old houses and old buildings, and I've often noticed that the farther you go up into the building, you get into the bedroom area, really small fireplaces, and you said there were coal baskets. Explain that for me.
Well, obviously there's wood-burning fireplaces, and back in mid-1800s, late-1800s, around this area, because we had plentiful coal, they would have coal burners. So it's a smaller fireplace. There's a basket. A lot of times you'll see a basket in the fireplace. Mm-hmm. A lot of times they had these decorative fronts to them, too, that you could take off, the summer covers, they call them. And they're, you know, a lot of the older houses, they're very sought after.
A lot of those would be covered with Rookwood tile, which was manufactured here in the Tri-State.
Absolutely. And most of those are the brick white, so they're not really functioning anymore. And coal was a great way to heat. Dirty, you know, but it was hot. And once you get our coal going, it would really warm the area.
Right. That's fascinating stuff. And I've heard you give hope to some of our listeners who have called and said, I've got this beautiful house, old fireplace, and I've been told that it's not been used. Tell us a little bit about somebody who might call you with that same question. What do? You come out?
Oh, sure. We come out for any reason to do it their fireplace. And if they have a real old one and they want to know if they could use it, we could let them know, or they just don't like how it looks. You know, if they say, I want a facelift.
Right.
I have this old Rookwood, but it's all cracked up and it's not worth anything. Well, I can take that off. We could put something in their fireplace, decorate the exterior with new brick, new cultured stone or tile, mm-hmm. get a new mantle on there, make it look brand new again. The key is to try to make it functioning, though, so that they actually can use it.
Right.
Instead of, decorating for nothing.
Exactly. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. Go to vondahar.com or give them a call, 513-242-1110. And tell us what's the first thing someone should look at if they're thinking about, should I put a fire in this fireplace or not?
Has it been inspected first? Before they put one piece of wood in it,
right.
If they don't know the history of the fireplace, get it inspected, whether it's from us or from one another chimney mm-hmm. professional, mm-hmm. Because it only takes one time, and if they've already had a chimney fire in it, or if there's a lot of creosote in it.
Yeah. You said something, too, that caught my ear, that fireplaces and fire chimneys are designed by fault to survive one chimney fire.
A masonry fireplace, even a prefab, we can get into what a prefab wood burner is, but once your flue tiles crack, and your chimney is sort of like a bunker. It's all block, your mm-hmm. masonry chimney, it's block and brick construction, terracotta flue tile. But once you get a breach of a fire into the liner, the flue tile of a chimney, and it cracks it, and you'll see vertical cracks because when there's a rapid expansion in that flue tile, it cracks that flue tile. And what happens, so every time a flue tile gets warm, when you're trying to draft, it'll open up, right? So that crack will get wider, actually.
Mm-hmm.
It might look like a little line on a camera, but when it warms up, it opens up. And if you're getting creosote and smoke into the base of your chimney, that's not real safe.
Because
you can never clean that. You can never get that odor out. But that's a good point. It's made a good once. And what we do is, people have chimney fires, we have to tear those flue tiles out. Easier said than done, but there's a breaker bar. We're on top of your chimney, and we're breaking them down, and we pull it out from underneath inside your firebox. And then based on the opening of your fireplace, determines the size of the liner that we're going to drop down, a stainless steel heavy-duty liner.
Mm-hmm.
So we drop that down in the flue, and usually they're between 10 and 12-inch diameter liners. We drop that down where the flue tiles used to be, and then sometimes you can wrap them with a 1-inch non-flammable insulation, foil-faced. Usually what we do is we pour a Thermix insulation mix down the exterior around that flue, and it insulates it and hardens it up.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that we do for the fireplaces when they have chimney fires, we tear the crown off, because when you're taking a flue tile out, you're going to bust that crown up.
Sure.
So, and concrete and concrete don't marry together real well once you try to patch it.
Sure.
So we wind up doing a new crown. But when we take the flue tiles out, instead of having a liner show up the top of your metal liner coming out, I usually take a partial flue tile and stack it up there, and then we pour a crown. So from the outside, it looks like a regular chimney. If you look up from the bottom inside the firebox, you see the liner in there.
Gotcha. 749-B105, in and around the house with Tony and Ernie. Kurt Vondahar, thank you so much for coming in. And we've got to have you come back, because there's a wealth of information available there. Go to vondahar.com or give them a call, 513-242-1110. In and around the house with Tony and Ernie, your local home and garden guys. We'll talk to you next week.